Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 15, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is the Gospel of John. We're going to be reading chapter 2. Last week we did read chapter 1. We just started that book. So it'll be the Gospel of John, chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, They have no wine. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Jesus saith unto them, Fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, Draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bare it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was, for the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom, and saith unto him, Every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse, but thou hast kept the good wine until now. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. After this he went down to Capernaum, he and his mother and his brethren and his disciples, and they continued there not many days. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem, and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the changers of money, sitting. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money, and overthrew the tables, and said unto them that sold doves, Take these things hence, make not my Father's house an house of merchandise. And his disciples remembered that it was written, The zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, What sign showest thou unto us, seeing that thou doest these things? Jesus answered and said unto them, Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then said the Jews, 46 years was this temple in building, and wilt thou rear it up in 3 days? But he spoke of the temple of his body. When therefore he was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this unto them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name, when they saw the miracles which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them, because he knew all men, and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man.
Okay, tonight we're going to start right off into taking questions, those people who have sent questions in. Jen, do you have questions for us? I think we had some left over from last week, and hopefully we'll be able to get to them all tonight. Anybody would like to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. Star 6 to get into the queue, and I think it tells you to hit a 1 after that. So, Jan, you here? Or Terry?
Yeah, Jan's here. Yeah, he's got questions.
Oh, there he goes. He's muted. Probably talking into his muted mic.
Yeah.
Well, he's unmuted now. Jan? Now he's muted again. Unmuted. Is that you muting and unmuting him, Terry? Maybe he walked away for a moment.
No, I'm not touching the board.
Okay.
Brent's here if you want to start that.
Yeah, in a few minutes we'll move over to that. But real quick, this week I didn't prepare anything particular. I've been kind of really busy with quite a few things, and I've been working on different handbooks. I think we spoke a little bit about that last week, and maybe some about it the week before. But we've been getting these handbooks done and updating all of our handbooks. Anybody who would like to take a look at them, they're under People's Duty. And if you come down, you can find all the handbooks under the title Handbooks right here underneath People's Duty. But I also put specific handbooks into specific areas. For instance, if you go to Organizing Your County Committee of Safety here and you click on that, you'll still find a link for the handbooks. But it'll tell you, instead of going directly to Committee of Safety Handbook, Committee of Safety Handbook, it'll take you right back to that page where all the rest of the handbooks are. But inside, alongside that also are some other things. There's a resolution that we wrote. There's the vow. There's a juris questionnaire. There's a recall petition. And a few other things. Oh, also the charter and resolution for the committees of safety. So, again, anybody wants to start looking at that, the one we just finished, I don't think it's up here yet. Actually, I finished it today, I think, and it has to be sent for some corrections, get it perfected as best we can. So it'll probably be up here during the week sometime once we go through that. So with that, Jan, if you're not here, we'll move along.
I know the first question, John.
Okay, let's take what you got.
In the common law handbook, a principle states, for there to be a crime, there must first be a victim, corpus delicti. The state cannot be the injured party. In the absence of a victim, there can be no crime. Where would I find that source?
Oh, there should be the source referred to on that. That's something we quote quite often. I'm sure if you go through the handbooks, if it's not in that handbook, I'll see, maybe look in some of the other handbooks, because a lot of different things are in each of the handbooks in order to prepare people. You know, we want to talk particularly about the law and our courts and common law. And so that should be found. I'm trying to think, well, first of all, it comes from common law. That is a principle. For every injury, there must be a crime. But it is quoted somewhere where it says that even the state cannot be that, cannot be.
Is it a maxim?
Party. Excuse me?
Is it a maxim?
Anything that is obviously true on its face is a maxim. I mean, isn't it clear, I think, if we really think about it, isn't it absolutely clear that without a victim, there could be no crime? There must be an injured party. Now, it is true, for instance, someone can do a crime like embezzlement or something to the state. And, the state isn't really the victim. It's the people, because it's the people's money, it's the people's government, and so on. So there is injuries there. But also we have equity, and equity is part of common law. It's the process by which we judge our elected and appointed people, and also those who are participating in commercial activity. The federal government has, of course, some codes and regulations and requirements for interstate commercial activity, and each state has its own rules, laws, and regulations on commercial activity, and also their government agencies and those people who are working for the government, and those, of course, who are elected or appointed, and so on. So there is a process for certain things in equity concerning a crime maybe that could be viewed as injuring the state. But again, the state cannot really be injured. So there must be a sworn affidavit of someone being injured. And of course, a witness you take a murder case, for instance, the person murdered obviously can't make a sworn statement or anything, but there are witnesses that do support the case and so on. And that would be the same thing in a case of embezzlement or some kind of a case within government or whatever. But generally speaking, and this is the most important thing, is that we are not to be governed by man-made law. We are only to be under God's law, which is what's called the law. And if you go into Black's Law Dictionary, I have found that there are 51 different jurisdictions, and one of them is law. And the one that is law brings you under common law. All other law is man-made law. Sometimes it's referred to as positive law, but it's man-made law. It's legislative law. But again, there are 50 other different types of laws. Another one of it is equity. So equity has its own process of law. And again, that is for government, particularly in commercial activities, or anybody under some kind of a contract of that type within our government. And, of course, their powers and authorities were given to them by the Constitution under Article 1, Section 8 of that Constitution. Now, equity is I guess you can call it civil law, but it's called equity, though, because it's really, and I think there's a difference between the two for this reason alone. Equity really identifies with lawful law because it's under common law. So even our equity is under common law. Prior to 1938, the equity courts ran under the rules of common law. And it was in, of course, 1938 when that changed and they did away with common law. They combined the common law with equity and call it civil law. One law, one thing. So we are now governed by civil law, which is Babylonian law. We can trace that right back. It's the law of the city and municipality law. It's got many names, Roman law. It's all about controlling the people, fleecing and fining the people, profiting off of the people, and also suppressing the people. It's keeping them in check by the government, and that's not what we're supposed to be under. But people not realizing it's exactly what we're under. We've been under it for quite some time. You know, again, going back to common law, when you get into a court of law, let's think of the difference of the two. An equity court proceeds under administrative processes. And if it becomes criminal, it then becomes a court of law if someone was to be brought into that court of law. So if it's equity, the judge, there is a judge that rules, not people, just a judge. And, of course, there is a process of appeals. But that judge in those courts does not have the power to fine or incarcerate. I've been thinking about this recently and looking at a lot of different things, and it's become pretty clear, and I don't know why it didn't come clear quickly, but it's come pretty clear. No man can judge another man. You cannot have a judge to make any kind of a judgment and give them some kind of a punishment under our law. That's just unlawful. It shouldn't happen. It has been happening for quite some time. Anytime a case turns criminal, it must go into a due process. And due process is a hearing under the rules of the common law and being judged under common law. So it's a court of justice that you're in, not a court of equity or some kind of an administrative process. You can't take you can take this to a different way. If someone is sued by the government for some reason, they're trying to take money or something away from them, they can't do that in an equity court either. It must go into, as soon as there's a crime involved, or you're trying to take something away from someone, whether it's you're trying to take their life, or their property, you have to, it automatically turns into a court of law. You must be judged in, all individuals must be judged in a court of law. Now, of course, take a person working for an agency who broke certain regulations, rules, and codes, and the codes called it a crime, and then it lays out what the process, not the process, but what the penalty might be for that crime. And so those people are held under those contracts because they've taken on some power and authority, and they've agreed to the terms when they took the oath and became part of our government, and now, or even commercial activity. So now they can be tried under that kind of, I guess we'll call it a contract, an agreement, under equity. Now, once it's in a court of law, though, where the people have the power, of course, to nullify a law, they can disagree with a law, not like it. Maybe they can say the law doesn't fit, or the law is unconstitutional, unlawful, or it's too tough or too strong. And they can alter or change it any way they want. Of course, it's not happening today because they robbed us of that heritage, our true liberty. This is our true liberty, by the way, to be free from all law except the law of God. So to be free from all man legislation, that's what liberty is, where the government has nothing to hold upon you for any reasons. They can't license you to do things. They can't, nothing. Again, we get into the common law when there's an injury occurs. You steal something or whatever the case may be. So it's important to realize the difference, but it brings us right to the essence of liberty. So we are no longer really free people. We haven't been for a long time. Over the years, it's progressively gotten worse and worse. And the people, you know, it's like the slow boil. You never realize it's boiling. So we're in bad shape, and people need to come. The only way we're going to save this problem really is through education and for the people to step up and take control of their nation to seize their heritage. All right, I know that was kind of a long answer, but it was a good opportunity to look at that.
Anything else? Can ask another one. He just sent me the questions, Doc. So let me download it, and I can have the questions, or you can go on. I have another question that just it came from my reading today, and I don't know. I don't want to take advantage of this position. Okay.
Yeah, no, I got right ahead anyway.
Go ahead anyway. Okay.
Yeah,
let me back up
you
to
really
it here.
Much of an opportunity to ask.
I was reading in Nadelson, and I don't know how much respect you and Brent have for Nadelson, but this might lie along his thing, and you may have answered it already. From Nadelson, in the original Constitution by Rob Nadelson, the common law divided crimes into mala in se and mala prohibita. A crime malum in se was one that was evil in itself, for it violated natural law. Examples were murder, theft, and treason. A malum prohibitum, a prevented or prohibited evil, was a crime only because it violated some scheme of legislative regulation. An example was violation of a commercial restriction. And that sounded more like the bar. Do they still hold that, or is that, you know, he's claiming it's common law that made that division, and that there should be laws, and I tend to agree with that, but I'm on shaky ground. I can't defend it. Am I making any sense?
Well, again, you know, if there's some kind of a commercial restriction, we gave them the legislators the power and the authority to write legislation concerning commercial activity. If that particular legislation is found to be repugnant to the Constitution, if it's a crime, a situation, or something where it's in a court of law and not in a court of equity. Remember, a court of equity tries those things, but if it becomes criminal, it must open up a court of law. It must turn to a court of record where we have jurors, 12 jurors who sit and listen and look at it from 12 different angles and hash it out and figure out what took place. And if you really take close looks at the facts, and you've got 12 people looking at the facts, you'll probably figure out exactly what happened and who might be guilty of what. You cannot make some kind of a law or a restriction on our behavior. So you could take commercial, some legislation, and you can apply it upon someone. Let's say someone traveling on the highways, the roads, and they violate some kind of a law. Maybe there's a weight restriction on the truck, or maybe there's certain things that can't be transported in certain areas, or maybe they're speeding, or whatever the case may be. They can be pulled over and give a citation, fined, and eventually, and so on.
Yeah, his example says it can, a violation of a commercial restriction. So I think that's, you're right. I missed that.
Yeah, that could happen. And of course, again, when you participate in that activity, you are agreeing to the rules. So it's not like, you know, all of a sudden you need a court of law to deal with an equity problem where there's a fine involved because it was written into the legislation. Okay, so it's really just applying the law, all right? Now, which would be what's called positive law or legislative law, man-made law, and many different names. It's called equity. You cannot apply the commercial rules to an individual driving on the road with their vehicle. Now, they do, but they shouldn't. I mean, look at we are so bogged down with rules and regulations and laws and needing a permit for this and permission for that. And I mean, you know, this is we've lost our liberty. People haven't realized. And you know what you realize is when you get into a, if you get into a bad situation and you're accused of something and you find yourself in a court of, what they claim a court of law, you know, criminal court they'll call it, which is no court of law at all, by the way. But you find yourself in a criminal court and then all of a sudden you discover you don't have certain rights that you thought you had. That's what surprised me and got me involved back in 1999. Discovering that they just didn't care about the Constitution in these courts. They did whatever they pleased, and they just ignored you and fleeced you. That's the problem. So people generally speak and behave. You know, we're out in public. You know, people have all kinds of quirks and problems, and maybe they misbehave at home or whatever the case may be. But in public, generally speaking, most people are polite to each other and we yield to each other. And, you know, we're kind of social, not kind of social, we are social beings. So, that's just, everything would work out properly. We don't need all these regulations. It makes sense when you come to a red light to stop. You know, it makes all the sense in the world. You don't let the other traffic go. But if there's nobody there, you know, especially if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you hear the crickets, you stop and make your turn or whatever you're going to do or go straight ahead. But it's all about common sense, ultimately.
Okay, Jan has passed the questions on to me. Would you like me to ask the next?
Go right ahead. And anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 to get into the queue.
Do you cover in Kentucky? I am located in Henderson, Kentucky. I'm looking really to figure out if there is a way that when we have had our CPS case moved to federal court and started a civil suit, if there's anything to file to get our kids returned home while we are going through this process, and there's a question mark after that. On top of that, I did a common law private court contract with CPS. I then took it to arbitration and have recently filed for a breach of contract and to get the arbitration turned into a judgment. So I'm not sure if there is something more I can do in that process to get the kids home. If you or anyone could answer my questions or help in any way, I would greatly appreciate it.
And that's in family court, I presume, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. They got a lot to answer for, I'll tell you that. The most evil courts in our land is family court. They're destructive. I mean, you know, what kind of world is it that it's a lawyer for everybody involved to decide how your family is going to go forward and operate and work together, live together, and so on. But they're very destructive. They're not there to put things together. They're there to rip things apart and fleece the people. And they get a lot of money out of this. You know, it's really a big cash register here, and. And so the state provides a lot of money for these things to go forward, and lives are destroyed. Unfortunately, they listen to nobody. I mean, they totally, totally, totally make everything up as they go, 100%. And whatever rules they have, they'll decide whether they're going to use that rule or not. And it's just really evil. I have never seen a family court operate with any concern for the individuals involved in that court. So they're very destructive. And that's true. This is true about all courts, just that I think that that's the worst. I mean, town courts and village courts and state courts, the U.S. Supreme Court, they're all just lost. And again, it's a lot of it is the people's fault. I mean, we have been, our knowledge of who we are as a people, our heritage, our background, what common law is, how it works, how a court should work. I mean, we have no clue on any of those things because they don't teach us that in school. And what they'll teach you, look, if you get in trouble, go get a lawyer. You can't figure things out in the court. It's too much for you. It's too big. And they don't like when you come in if you're not a lawyer. And they give you a harder time, too. But they do whatever they want to do. So it's all a corrupt system. Look what the United States Supreme Court has done with this election. They threw our nation to the streets, under the bus. They didn't care. Probably they're being, they're holding a gun or something to their heads, you know, some kind of a threat, or they got something on them or something. But in any event, people put themselves into these positions, and these are educated people. They should know things, and they shouldn't find themselves in those situations, but here we are, they do. But that just tells us how bad it is. And the knowledge, how bad the knowledge and the realization of how we should go forward and the power of the people and the power of nullification is totally lost. Look, you got 12 or 13 states. Matter of fact, I think it's 13 or 14 states. That wants to go after and sue the president so that they don't have to do this or that. I think it's about the border, if I remember. I forget exactly what it was about, but probably the election. But in any event, these states that are suing to do something to protect the borders, why even bother suing them? Why don't they just go fix the problem collectively themselves? Keep their own, don't send their monies into states, I'm talking about. They shouldn't send their money into the federal government. Tell them they're not doing their job. You know, the preamble of the Constitution requires that they protect the states and to guarantee a Republican form of government in the Constitution. And they totally ignore this. So why pay any attention to them? Nullify it. You know, Jefferson ran into trouble with the judges of his day. He also ran into trouble with the legislators of his day. But he understood, he was a power, he was a president, and he just ignored them. He nullified them and went and did what he had to do. And that's what I think the states really should be doing at this point because it's that far away. But the people can do this, and that's why we're building committees of safety across this nation in every county. And we're reorganizing everything of who we are as a people. We're doing exactly what our founding fathers did. They organized committees of safety. They ran the governments alongside governments. And it's not really a government. It's just the people, you know, taking control of their government. And they took control of their local government. And they built a federal government. That government is controlled. If you control your local government, you control the federal government. That's key. Forget who it was that said all politics is local. That is a true statement. You have to get involved in your local government. You got to get involved with your sheriff first and foremost.
I think Tip O'Neill was the one who said that.
Yes, I believe it was. Yeah. So you got to get involved with your sheriff, and you got to work with your sheriff, and then you got to approach all of the local governments within your county. You know, starting down in a village or you start in the county level, whatever. And you approach them, and they'll get to the point where they realize, and especially if this grows, and it should grow because this is people power, this is government by consent in action, this is liberty, this is our heritage, this is our right, unalienable right, to govern ourselves, and shame on us if we don't, and we should lose it if we don't, and we will lose it if we don't. We have lost it because we didn't. But that, I think, had a lot to do with the conspiracy. They're teaching, they used to teach our children, you know, out of the Bible, and they used to teach our children civics and the necessary things of life. I mean, an eighth grader back in the 1800s had a college-level education. There wasn't a doctrine or anything in any particular subject, but they had a higher education because they were focused in on teaching. Now, today, you know, we send children to school for basically 12 years through high school, and they're lucky if they got a fifth-grade education. They're taught to be communists at this point. That's what I've seen in schools. The whole thing's turned upside down. So our children are coming out totally brainwashed, no knowledge of their heritage, no knowledge of our founding fathers, no knowledge of anything, what liberty is, and nothing. So we have this window of opportunity. I think it's going to be very small. We got a few years to do what we have to do, and if we don't do it, we'll lose it. And if we lose it, it's because we deserve it, because we refuse to do it. But we have to do it. All right, next question.
I saw that Mr. Robert Overhuel was lauded for his help in coordinating with sheriffs and militia committees. And then it has his email address. Question, does Mr. Overhuel coordinate with a peacekeeping task force? If not, which militia committees does he coordinate with? And he's got a second and a third question here.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I do know that he's involved with local politics and the sheriff, so. But other than that, I don't know.
Do you want Robert to answer it?
Oh, yeah, sure. Robert, you here?
Let's see. I thought I saw him here. Yeah, he's here.
No. I'm here.
Hey, how you doing, Robert? By the way, we should try to talk this week, okay?
Okay, sure. We'll
whenever
get
you
together.
Get a chance, just give me a ring during the day or something.
What's the best time, morning or afternoon?
Early afternoon, late morning.
Okay, gotcha.
He says, I'd like Mr. Overhuel.
So you're on my time, too, I think. You're what, Michigan, right?
Yeah, we're in the same time.
Yeah, same time zone.
Mm-hmm. Well, different governors, same time. But the same lot of governors. How's
right.
that? Anyhow, John, you know some of what I'm doing, but mm-hmm. I'm doing involving mainly the Southwest Michigan, getting those all into one unit. It's coming along. I've been working closer with our favorite sheriff. And there is a lot of things involved in the background in all this. Some of it goes back to the arrest by an accusation by our governor about the militia guys and one thing and another, which has all been proven to be false. But yet, on the other hand, two of the innocent people that are in the militia have not been found yet, and we're looking for them. It's been quite a while ago, and it seems that the governor and the attorney general of Michigan will not honor requests, neither will the state police of Michigan. That's another whole story. State police of Michigan consider themselves to be the law in the state of Michigan, which is erroneous. Getting a little sidetracked here, but they were established to protect the governor. And so Soapy Williams thought that they did such a good job. Why? They need to be over everything in the state of Michigan, which was a sad day. But anyhow,
do they have any fear of the sheriffs over there?
They will. Currently, some do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking just one sheriff. I'm talking
I have noticed that a lot of police officers, when they come in contact with the sheriff, even though they kind of ignore them, they don't call them, and a lot of things, it seems such a big separation. But I did notice that when a sheriff does come onto a scene and takes over, everybody just steps aside. And,
yes.
You know, and that's what sheriffs need to do more often, you know.
They are in a particular spot right now that is not very pleasant. Take the state of Michigan. The sheriff is elected by the people even though I laugh at it because it's a corporate election rather than being a election of the people, which most people know, or in groups like NLA, we know. But the point being this, there will soon, and it's not going to be too far away, all these sheriffs are talking in the background. Almost every one of them. I can't talk
for all. How many are there out there?
In Michigan, we got 83.
83, okay.
How many sheriffs that are talking all together? I would say three quarters of the 3,133. Mm-hmm. You will not hear about them. They will not come out. But there is going to be, I feel, there is going to be a day of reckoning, and it's not going to be very far away. And
yes,
they
so
have been
a great
pushed mainly by...
For them. You're right.
And the main item on this whole thing is the way the nobility of our court system has treated the sheriff, realizing that the bar attorneys and judges are not elected by the people. Queen Lizzie over there in England is their boss. And so they have pushed this far enough that there is yet to be quite a bit of resentment of the people. I live in a city that I have requested oath of office from every member of the council, the chief of police, city managers, past and present. Not too much the present yet, but the past, yes. And none of them have replied to a FOIA. And some of this goes back to 2007, in which now I am writing all of them, giving them their second note of FOIA request. After that, I will go to appeal and kind of following your practice, which you teach very well, John, and they will answer in the result, and it'll be to the 14th Amendment. Either they will be of the Constitution for, or they will be without completely. So that's where I intend on taking it. And this involves the city of South Haven, the county of Van Buren, and the state of Michigan. That's where I'm going to keep it at. But I'm going to keep it in common law only. And I will not answer to the bar. The only way I'll answer them is identity theft and corporate. And I'm not a corporate entity. So... But as far as the militia, yes, they're active. I believe in Van Buren County, my wildest guess would be there is probably a group of 75 to 80. And throughout Michigan, I don't know. I had heard one time in the southern half of the Lower Peninsula, and this hasn't been too long ago, there's 16,000 members. I cannot prove it, but that's hearsay. It is from one of the members. It's the non-regulated, unregulated, however you want to say it, militia. But they're active. And really, every person... Or every one of the people. When I use the word person, I'm referring back to the days of the framers, when being politically correct was being a part of the republic, not all the rest of this junk out there floating around today. But it will happen, and John, it's not going to be too long. It's going to be very soon.
Yeah, I do agree. I think when the hammer comes down, when Trump brings the hammer down not long after that, I think that's probably when the sheriffs will have a great opportunity to clean house in their own counties.
That, John, you're absolutely correct. That is when they will emerge, believe me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's when we, the people, should be emerging. And if we don't, shame on us. We have to get these committees of safety going. So.
Well, I look at it this way, John. The sheriff is the key. The sheriff controls the law in the county. And the sheriff should be also advising on all forms, militia, committee men, even getting into property owners through the Electoral College, being an elector, and I strongly believe in that. I really, really sends me off 460 degrees when somebody says, I'm going to encumber your property with a tax, and I'm a renter, or I don't own property, or I am a foreign entity, and you're going to pay the tax for what I want. Sorry. That day is going to come to an end, and I don't think that's too far away neither, because I've been invited into the United States Taxpayers Party and also the Constitutional Party, which is part of the United States Taxpayers. There are a lot of groups. It's too bad that a lot of these patriotic groups are so dependent of their own territory. It would be a very joyous day to see 8 or 10 of these people on the forefront in these groups. And I know you've made attempts, and I just hope that it will happen, but I think it will. Things are getting closer. I've noticed that people treat people a lot nicer these days, but they're getting awful grouchy with what's going on today as far as the elections. Holy cow. Some of these people really cut loose, and rightfully so. They feel like they've had a country stolen. Well, they've had the country stolen, and also the republic is very shaky. So yeah, it's up to the people.
Well, indeed, we have been robbed. So, Okay, thanks a lot, Robert. Appreciate it. And I'll talk to you soon. By the way, I don't know if you know, I updated the sheriff's handbook about a week or so ago, maybe less, I don't know.
I heard that you don't want the old one issue. I've heard that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a few significant changes in there that I think would be very helpful. So,
okay.
Okay, thank you.
I'll take a peek and get up with you in the next couple of days.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. All right, what else we got there? And by the way, Gerard, did you get in yet?
Gerard's having problems getting in. It gave him a thing that the password had been changed. And I think Jan and I both hit that when we logged in tonight, and we tried it again, it went through.
That's weird.
He's working it right now.
All right, well, send him a note. He could call them, and they'll help him get in.
Okay.
We'll just go to Start.
I will do that.
What is it called? Startmeeting.com, I think. All right, what other questions we got?
The second part of that one, which I failed to get in, was I'd like it if Mr. Overhill could provide me a contact for a U.S. Marshal or Continental Marshal in the Colorado State area, or someone who might have a Marshal contact. I understand that Marshals help and support sheriffs with state constitutional law in their counties and other U.S. laws.
You're talking about U.S. Marshals then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, maybe that is. I don't know.
I don't know about that either.
Yeah, I can't say anything. Robert, if you have any knowledge on that, you can pipe in. Otherwise, we'll take our next question.
I would say this, John. As far as to the gentleman in Colorado, every state has, usually in the federal district court system, there is a U.S. Marshal on station. And all they have to do is call or go to the district court, the federal district court. Some states have two. Some states have quite a few, like New York and California have got quite a few. But there usually is a U.S. Marshal on station. And just either call them.
Yeah, there is an appointed U.S. Marshal by the president in every single district, the federal district. And, of course, they have deputies. I don't know how many they might have. But they can appoint deputies, of course.
That's where I go.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next question.
Okay, I am doing research on what caused the Civil War and found that Lincoln wanted to expand the new America and any states seceding from the Union would not go along with his plans. Now, after Lincoln destroyed the people's right to self-govern, Grant came along and created the Organic Act of 1871 to make our country a corporation. What is the National Liberty Alliance doing to bring back our republic?
Well, we're forming committees of safety to do that. You know, we can't put all that much on Lincoln, I don't think, anyway. I've heard bad things about him. I've heard good things about him. And the bad things, I can't know that I can really trace down to really claim it to be truth or anything. The big question is, did he have the right to go to war? And I've been on both sides of that issue for a while, and some time ago I settled in on the fact that he did the right thing. But then, a lot of people will say, well, it wasn't really about freeing the slaves, it was about something else. But no, that's not true. The issue was really focused in on slave trade. And Lincoln was very strong on the fact that there should not be slaves. And I hear all kinds of stories. In our paperwork and on our website, we've got a memorandum concerning our founding fathers and slavery. And in that, we ended up talking quite a bit about Lincoln also, because he had a lot to say about this and about our founding fathers and who we are as a people. This nation was created with the idea of not being slaves. The problem was it was already sewed into their society because they were part of Britain and they were born into a nation that had slaves. And Jefferson at a very young age realized the problem with this, and many of our founding fathers struggled with it, and they tried to structure and create a union without the slave situation, the slave problem. But there were certain states that wouldn't have signed on. So they sort of set it aside, and they did set forth a plan to try to eventually get rid of slavery in America. And Jefferson spent a lot of time, and they don't talk about this, but Jefferson spent a lot of time trying to emancipate slaves, make it legal to begin with to emancipate them, because he wanted to free his slaves. He couldn't sell them. It was unlawful in Virginia in those days to sell a slave, so he couldn't sell them. And he refused to, sell them, and he refused to give them away. He wanted to liberate them. So he couldn't do that, and he did. He was on the Virginia legislature twice. I believe it was in 74 and 75, 1774 and 1775, I believe. And he was called to go to the legislature to participate and represent his area. And in both cases, that's exactly what he tried to do, is pass laws. He also became governor and tried to influence the legislatures to pass the laws to back off on the slavery. And then, of course, he wrote the Declaration of Independence in 76, all men are created equal. And that's the true history. But they don't talk about that. And now, when I really think about the Civil War, The real focus, there were other problems, of course, for fighting that war, but I believe the principal, everything that I can tell, the principal purpose was dealing with slavery as an economic thing, and it really touched a lot of different things. But that was a right, because the government, is to secure our liberties. The black people were people living in our nation, born here. And they shouldn't have been slaves, so he had a duty as part of the federal government, just like the legislature and the courts should have or would have had duty to do the right thing and protect the people's unalienable rights. And so Lincoln did end up going to war, and at the end of the day, the slaves were free, and so it was a principal part of that war. And it's the sin of America. It's the reason, I don't think, our founding fathers really, they should have stood a little stronger on this and just allowed the few states who refused to participate for slavery reasons to, well, okay, fine, then we'll go without you. I think they would have come aboard eventually, maybe, I don't know. Maybe not. I think we would have been blessed more. I think God sent us a sign on that, in a sense, with a cracked Liberty Bell. And that was reforged, by the way, and that one cracked also. And it was proclaim liberty across the land, I think it was Deuteronomy, if I recall. Oh, no, Leviticus. Leviticus 26, I think, as a matter of fact. But in any event, there was a Bible verse on there about proclaiming liberty. And yet, it was a contradiction to America. And so to some degree, we were not blessed by that. We were cursed by that. And I think that's the reason why America has gone through a lot of pains and sufferings, nevertheless maintaining the holding up of the cross continued up until this day. And I think I'm starting to see people starting to really turn in many ways towards God. Could be wrong in that, but that's my perception at this moment when I talk to people, more than I've ever before see that move towards God and country. Patriotism, all that connected together. I think it was a moral issue. I think he had a duty to do it, and he did what he did, and it was successful. But next question, Terry.
Okay. Ilro 650 said, my name is Tiana, and I am in King County, Washington. I have been a member for a while now, and I have not been really directly involved with everything going on, but am aware of the urgency that the NLA's message needs to reach the masses, so I have been doing a lot of brainstorming about how to reach as many people as possible, as fast as possible, and today I joined a friend at an Eagles club and introduced NLA's plan, and I believe that I have found a woman that is willing to chair and organize a COS for Snohomish County, Washington. This evening, I myself registered to become a member of the Eagles, and I think they are the perfect venue for reaching critical mass in a very fast and effective way. I have a good friend in Oregon who I'm traveling to meet with tomorrow if plans go right, who I am going to introduce your message to and have her begin to work on spreading the word in Oregon. I feel like my calling is to bring this information to people in person, so that is what I am going to do. I am sharing this with you because I would like your opinion on my strategy to involve the people of the Eagles Club, because many of them are veterans and retired people that have the time to get involved in something of such great importance. That is my hope anyway. I feel very positive about this. Please share your thoughts with me when you have time. Thanks.
Okay, yeah. Look, at local liberty groups are the best way to go. And there are many groups that they may not sound sometimes as liberty groups, but they are focused in on patriotism, morality, family, and the American way. And in every county you'll find many of them. And that's the best source that we can use to find people to join up for the committees of safety. For many, many reasons. First of all, they're a little more educated in who we are as a people, usually. Okay, and maybe more patriotic than most, maybe also. But the other thing is there are people that are active and doing things. They want to do something. They want things to be made better. And that's why they have liberty groups and meetings in these counties. And they've really flourished quite a bit in the past 12 or 14 years or so. You know, particularly I saw the big surge come up with the Ron Paul movement and many other things that have come after that, the Tea Parties and all kinds of 9/11, 9/12s. All kinds of groups. So, yeah, that's the best place to go. As a matter of fact, you know, hopefully we'll get people who will step up to really push this plan forward in their states, okay? And you know, for instance, I'm here in New York, and I have brought the message of committeemen and other things throughout my state some years back and continue to do so, of course. But I'm planning to tour my state this coming spring and summer and hit key areas and invite people to try to stimulate the quick growth of committees of safety here in New York State. Hopefully other people will take that up too. So anybody who would like to do that for their state, you know, to learn exactly all of the details of what we're doing and how we're doing it, really is just to get a hold of the handbooks. That'll really give you a good education on what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I would start off with the Committee of Safety Handbook. That is the book. That is the pivotal book that people need to start working out to start getting activity going into their counties. And it explains all of the things that need to be done, the different positions that we, the people, need to take and the power structures we need to take control of and so on. That's the best handbook to start with. But after that, I would go through all the handbooks because, you know, the Committees of Safety is going to be responsible for encouraging and filling positions for the committeemen, for instance. And in the filling of those positions, you know, they have to get more and more members and they have to become educated, and the people filling those positions have to become educated and prepared and qualified in order to become a committeeman. I do believe it's a wrongdoing for a person who is not has no knowledge of the Constitution to become a committeeman because they're going to do more destructive than anything. They'll be swayed by the narrative of the party and be doing the things that is in opposition to bringing us government back, you know, government by the consent of the people. So these committeemen need to at least learn civics and the Constitution, and so we provide those two courses, we're also rebuilding the militia. And again, it's up to that Committee of Safety to encourage, to pursue, to push, and to fill as many positions as possible in the militia. Everyone should join the militia and participate in one fashion or another. You know, some more active than others. We need to rebuild from the ground up our unorganized militia, and some of that should become the organized militia at some point when there's enough people in that county and other counties around that within that state. It reaches a certain kind of a point where it then becomes can become the organized militia. And we're also doing the same thing with the courts, to get back the courts of justice. We're building a committee, we're encouraging people to become administrators for the juries so that they can be properly orientated. And many other things. We also have the Republic Review that we're pushing forward and encouraging. A project that the Committees of Safety will be working with the committeemen and everyone, really, but the committeemen have the real focus in on this, working with the Committees of Safety to bring a proper education back to our children and even into our colleges. So it's all about education, being properly educated, to be properly informed, fully informed, to understand the power and the authority of the people and morality and family and patriotism, to learn about our heritage. All of this is the base for what we're doing. It's education, but then there's action. Let's take back the political process. Let's get rid of the parties. Let's get rid of the party bosses. Let's make them obey the Constitution, and if not, let's recall them. And that's what the committeemen do. The same thing in the courts. Let's get rid of these judges that don't belong in these courts. Let's make sure we have juries that are fully informed and understand the power and the authority that they make the law. History is clear. The sovereign makes the law. Just think about that. The sovereign makes the law. Kings make laws and unfortunately make laws to serve themselves. But we the people, we are the sovereign. We make the law and we have made the law. It's called the Constitution with its capstone Bill of Rights, of course, part of that Constitution. That's the law. And we've given legislators certain authority to write certain legislation, which would be law, in order to control and regulate and organize our government and also commercial activity to control that too. We've given them an authority, but we've never given them full power, because we have the power to nullify any law that they can possibly create, because we are the masters and they are the servants. And this is the attitude people have to start getting and thinking. You know, in order to be free, it starts with thinking free. And then after you're thinking free, you have to start acting free and stepping up to do what is necessary. And that's what we're trying to teach here in L.A. And this is what we have to do. If we want to become a free people, if we truly want to, you know, get back our heritage, to take it back what was stolen from us, then this is what's required. Let's get educated. And let's get our committees of safety going, and let's take control of our government from the grassroots, and we will control the federal government when we control the grassroots. Plus, we control the political process. We can recall anyone we want at any given time. It's a no-brainer for committeemen. Take this situation out in California, where they went out to get all of the signatures to recall the governor. And I understand they broke the million mark. And they did that quite quickly. Finally, the people are starting to see what their power is. The power of recall. Okay, that's a very powerful power. Now, it took them a little while. Actually, they did it pretty quick, to be honest with you. But if that job, if we were the committeemen, the elected committeemen, and they had elected committeemen in California, and they were properly informed and educated and understood the Constitution and was serious about it and putting people in the Constitution, the committeemen literally, inside of a week, could get a million signatures, because there's that many of them spread across the states. They just have to come together on a meeting, agree on something, and go out and get the papers signed. You know, each one of them would go out and get X amount of papers, a petition signed, and it could be done in a week. And, you know, what's given normally the general thing, I think, is 90 days or 60 days. I think the whole process is 90 days, but it's a 60-day process. I think the signatures have to be gotten within the time. And I don't know who even created that rule. But it is reasonable that, you know, you don't want to be trying to collect signatures for years to finally get to a point. So that isn't necessarily a consensus. So anyway, I guess that's all I got to say on that. Next question.
Aloha. Oh, no, wait. That's not the right one. I just found out that as of November of 2020, the King County Sheriff of Washington State was changed from being an elected sheriff by the people to an appointed sheriff by the county executive. Is that legal? Can they do that? What can we do about it now?
Yeah. Well, look, we have a situation similar to that here in the Northeast. We have Connecticut with eight counties. They've lost their sheriffs quite some time ago. I think it was in the 80s and the 90s. And here in New York, we've lost, I don't know whether we have ever had sheriffs in New York City, you know, actually elected. I should look into the history of that. We have five boroughs, which is five counties down in New York City, and they don't have elected sheriffs. They have appointed sheriffs. I believe it's the mayor that makes the appointment. Westchester County has, which is just north of New York City, doesn't have a sheriff. They got rid of their sheriff. And there is one county out in Long Island. I'm not sure which county it is. I think it is, Nassau, I think it is the one that doesn't have a sheriff. So we have seven counties here in New York with a problem, and we got next door eight counties in Connecticut that doesn't have sheriffs. Now, of course, they did it unlawfully, because if there is no sheriff, there is no law. There is no law enforcer, okay? There's no one. Look at the sheriff protects the king or the sovereign, okay? We, the people, are the king. We are the sovereign. We're king of our own homes and whatever we create in our life, you know? Everybody else has their own kingdom, whatever. But we're free, and we're not supposed to be held under any kind of a law. And that sheriff is to protect the people, ultimately the sovereign. That's the job. There, without that kind of a law enforcer, then common law cannot be enforced. And there's nothing lawful they can really do when it comes to seizing property and things of that nature. That must be done by the sheriff. That's part of the common law process. Little by little they're taking over, destroying the things of America, getting rid of the things that we use to build our heritage, our nation, and to protect our nation. And, the bailiffs are supposed to be working for the sheriff's department. The prisons, the county jails are supposed to be manned and cared for by the sheriff's department. And they're just destroying it. And it's the ignorance of the people allowing that to happen, not understanding the damage that's being done and the liberties in the future to be lost because of that. So, no, they cannot do that. And the people can change that over. Again, you get enough people, you get committees of safety, you get enough people in the counties and in the states to step up and do something. And when it's a county problem, you know, you can even have county to county. Other counties can work with you to fortify and help and deal with the problems and put the pressure upon the local government. And by the way, you know, it takes a while to develop the committeeman. There's a very narrow time point to become a committeeman. I believe it's a 6-week period. There's a point in time, they put out a political calendar, and there's a point in time when you start going out to get signatures for your designating petition, okay? And so that goes for 6 weeks, and there's a date when it ends. So you have to get the signatures between those 6 weeks, or 4 weeks, I think it's 6 weeks. But you have to get your signatures within that frame, that time frame. And if you get anything before, they don't count. If you get anything after, obviously they're not going to take it anyway, because there's a dead deadline on filing the paper, okay? We can do that and start forming as committeemen, but we should be, if we start to get large enough numbers, or just even small numbers and building up, we can start acting like committeemen. After all, we may not be elected, but guess what? The people who are in charge and that have the controls and make all the decisions, the party bosses, none of them are elected. I haven't found any yet, by the way. I mean, maybe there's some somewhere, but I haven't found them. And we discovered this in New York, clear as a bell, and was the best state really to study and research, because it was one of the original colonies, and also it was very rich in many things, and that includes the law also. So all of that, I don't know, they have destroyed what we have put together by stealing our sheriffs. We have to re-educate and take them back. So we can do that. We're planning on suing the state of Connecticut, and we're also planning on suing, and I'm not sure it's really we're going to sue the state of Connecticut. I got to think that out on how we would go about this, because we have seven counties in New York, and we need to bring it into the courts because they robbed us of this. Elected sheriffs must be returned to these counties. But now is not the time for us to do it, because we're not going to get anywhere in the courts. I think what we've been watching with what's going on with the election makes it clear we're not going to get anywhere in these courts. And we've been in the courts for quite some time now, 10 years? And we see exactly what's going on in the courts. We see that these people are traitors. They belong in jail. Let's put them in the jails that they built. They keep building more and more jails. Let's fill them up with them, because they need to be there. I recall a story about... I think it was Gerard telling it, of a judge that retired up here in upstate here in New York somewhere, in the Catskills or something, I don't know where. But he retired, and he was boasting in his retirement how he sent 1 million people to jail. That's pretty sick. That's pretty sad. And he had no power or authority to do that because a judge cannot send anyone to jail. Only the people. The people can say, yeah, it is a crime. Let's indict him. And the people will say, yeah, he's guilty. Let's send him to jail or not, or let's do this or let's do that, with an eye on, of course, restoring the injured party. Or, you know, the people will decide what the punishment might be. This is all the people's job. It doesn't belong to government. It doesn't belong to an elected or an appointed individual. It just doesn't. It belongs to the people. The people need to realize this message and to take it to heart and understand what they have lost by not having a proper court of justice. All right, I guess next question.
Aloha. I would like to know the procedure for bringing the state of Hawaii and county of Hawaii, both corporations, to the grand jury for the purpose of invalidating their COVID orders, including masking, social distancing, right to travel, and restrictions on assembly.
Yeah, well, I think that's about to hit ahead soon. You know, there's a lot of resistance in the courts. You know, you're not going to get much justice in these courts at the moment. We should prepare our cases, of course, and you know, you could try to get some cases going through and, you know, people who have been injured by this. And I know of people who was injured by this. I myself was injured by this. And go into the courts and try to get something. It's not going to be a failure to do that. Even if they rule against you, no matter how much you tell them, hey, look, I don't want you to rule anything. I want a trial jury here. Let's get the people to decide. You know, you're not going to get that, by the way, because they won't allow that. And because they got the guns, they control everything. But you can go through the case, make your case. We've got some sterling cases. I mean, we got cases that are so clear and bright and obviously just, and yet what they have done, the judges and the U.S. attorneys particularly and others, attorneys, what they have done, okay, was so destructive and evil. They broke every law. They broke their own laws as much as they've, of course, broke the common law. But that's okay. It's all on record. Preserve the record. And we'll get them on the other side, because that's my plan. We're going to get them on the other side. That's why we're indicting judges. We've got over 100... almost 200 judges. I'm not sure of the number, but I think we got close to 100 judges on the federal level. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask Jim on that. We got a lot of judges that we've indicted. Matter of fact, we're putting that package together to pull together those that we haven't filed yet, because we've indicted quite a few judges. So we intend on seeing those judges come into the courts of justice one day. We are going to make sure that happens. And every person who has lost their home, that has filed a paper with us, and they can even file it with us later, it doesn't matter. We will work diligently to get these peoples compensated for their loss, if possible, to get that home back that was taken away from them unlawfully, without due process. Whether it be by tax or mortgage, all of them do it without due process. Every case that's connected, that has attached themselves to our case here, and anyone is welcome to do that in a very simple manner, we do plan on pursuing justice for all those cases at some point. But the problem is you're just not going to get justice today. But I can see it. It's coming. It's close. It's close. Okay. And by the way, we are close to critical mass. We've got almost 10,000 members. We're coming up on the 10,000 mark. Not all of them are very active, but there are a lot of people who are paying attention and are active and starting to do things. But nevertheless, we should be close to that critical mass. We just have to hit that right place to get that right interview or something with enough numbers. And anybody who can assist us with that, if they can get us any interviews with anybody anywhere, get a hold of Francine or Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. So it's Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org or Francine. at nationallibertyalliance.org and let them know, and try to tie us together with interviews wherever we can get the word out. All right, next question.
A few weeks ago on the Monday night call, Gerard mentioned to a caller a resource that focused on traffic violations, and he really spoke highly of it, stating that the information had a 94% or so success rate of prevailing in court if the information was followed correctly by the defendants. I believe it was called Lewis Law. If possible, could he or anyone in NLA please specify or list the website or contact information in regards to it?
Well, yeah, I'm somewhat familiar, but I don't know what the name of it is. I'm familiar with some of the...
Gerard is on now, by the way.
Okay, well then, Gerard, if you're listening, why don't you pick up the mic and answer that question? Do you know if he's actually connected?
He was on one of the lines. So maybe.
All right, well, hold that question aside, and when he gets on, we can ask him, because he'd know more about that. I know he shared that information with me. We looked at it. You know, I've written some papers also, and, you know, it is pretty clear cut. And I did say I would post some papers, and I've been so busy I forgot all about that. Should make another note, and I get so many notes sometimes. I need notes to remind me of notes. I don't know. But I'm going to try to post some papers that people might be able to use and follow a process that I follow. But again, you know, I only push it so far, and it is good practice for you to go into a courtroom anyway and try to make an argument in a traffic case. And the whole thing is has nothing to do with you. It's all about commercial activities, and you know, could prove it right on the face of their own paperwork, okay? Because it says TL, at least here in New York, it says TL. It means traffic law, and traffic law is commercial, and commercial has nothing to do with we the people, and that can be proven very clearly. You can't apply a regulation or a statute or something that was meant for one agency or in this case, the commercial activities and traffic, movement. On just anybody. It is, you have to have personam jurisdiction and you have to have subject matter jurisdiction. Now, these courts have subject matter jurisdictions, maybe, but they don't have personam jurisdiction over the people because it doesn't apply to us. We don't fall within those jurisdictional situations. So. Okay, next question. When Gerard comes up, maybe he can answer that question.
Okay, does the NLA believe that Donald Trump will seek the presidency in 2024? It seems so far away that the interim worries me that a lot of can occur between now and then in our country, and it seems very painful to have to wait and also to wonder if this fraudulent election activity will recur then.
Yeah, I think most of NLA's leadership would agree with the answer I'm going to give, and the answer is no. I do not believe he's going to run for president in 24. I believe he's still the president of the United States. I believe that this other clown is president of the United States, Inc., and that they've drawn the difference between the two. And many people, military intelligence understands this, and of course Trump understands this, and many, many other people working with them, the Patriots, understand this. And there is a plan in play, and he's still making the certain calls behind the scenes, and they'll only allow Biden so far before. I mean, if he tries to do something really, really stupid, I think that would be a line that would be crossed, that would be a trip line, and the arrest would begin. There are trip lines out there. I just don't know what they are, but I know Q has spoken about them, and as each line is crossed, it trips the next step to happen and so on. So it's really governed by what's going on. And I do think... you know, as much as Trump and others tried to prevent anything crazy from happening in Washington, I do think that that kind of set us back a little bit, maybe, and gave a different focus, maybe, or a different, there's always a plan A and a plan B, and there's always a plan C and a D. I mean, it's insane to think that anybody with any intelligence would not have, other plans to exercise should plan A fail. So, and things on the, things out there in the battlefield, situations change, and so you have to change with the changes in the battlefield. And we are indeed at a battlefield. We are at war. We are still fighting the Revolutionary War. And people need to really think about that, because it's an absolute truth. We have never, the Revolutionary War was never totally won, okay? It was fought, of course, back in 1776 and on. In the 1789, okay, when we became a nation, we didn't yet win the war. It was yet in, 18? Let me think. I think it was 1818 when the King of England and the Pope signed and gave, the letters of marque, ultimately to barristers, to plunder America, to pirates, to plunder America, to destroy our economy, to destroy our law, to destroy our way of life. That has not changed, okay? And so we've been fighting covertly. This war has been going on covertly for hundreds of years, and only now recently is it overt. People are starting to really see. And so we are at, matter of fact, the pinnacle. That was brought up from a couple of different people recently. We've spoken about that. We're at that pinnacle. We're at the cliff. This is it, and things are about to happen, so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. So, yeah, I think I'm speaking for most, if not all, of the leadership here at National Liberty Alliance, that we pretty much see this plan coming to play. President Trump is going to finish the next 4 years, and then he won't be able to be president for a third term. And that's where I see it. Next question.
With the new gun control measures being proposed, has the NLA ever considered teaming up with the NRA to combat this unconstitutional legislation?
No. The NRA is run by lawyers as far as their fighting is concerned, number one. And at the, within them, they've been infiltrated like any other major organization in America. They've tried to infiltrate us numerous times. And but in any event, they've been infiltrated. And just listen to what they say. They agree that some new laws need to be made, but not what they're saying. What are they talking about? New law? Let's get rid of all the laws. There should be no law on having a weapon. None. Zero. I can appreciate a background check, and certain people can't have weapons for whatever reasons, but it has to be lawfully taken away from them. And if that's the case, then that's the case. I mean, if someone is insane, then it's lawful to not allow that person to have a weapon, of course, if they're a dangerous person. And if someone in certain situations, if it's lawful, then we can prevent people from having a weapon. But generally speaking, with today's technology, when I went to get my permit, and did get a permit because I didn't want to go to jail, but, in any event, it took 2 years. To get a permit. They had to go one background check after, and after that one, they had to have another one. The feds have one. I mean, this is really ridiculous. We have the technology we have today, and the knowledge and all the information in the computers today. You put someone's name, especially in their computers that they have, access to all kinds of different agencies and information and records and stuff. In seconds, they can find out that there's a situation with an individual who should not be having a weapon. They could know that very quickly. There's no need for a time period. There's no need for me to have a permit or a license permission to have a weapon. It's none of their business. And Of course, their plan is to eventually eliminate it altogether. They don't want us to have any weapons, because then we can easily be taken over. Right now, we still are somewhat of a problem to them. But anyway, next question.
Well, I think I'm going to stop right there, because the next one doesn't look like a question. It's just a statement.
Okay.
And I don't see the question in it at all. So I'll call it right there. The one that got moved back, Gerard just sent me an answer. He said, no, I have no sound. Cat chewed my wires.
Oh, okay. Well, so hopefully he'll get some wires connected before the night's over, but if not, we'll push on. All right, thank you, Terry. All right, Brent, are you here? We're going to move over to Brent, who's going to talk to us about the Constitution or something for a short time, and then after that we'll go to opening questions here in the Q&A session. Anybody wants to get into the QA, star 6, and I believe a 1 after that. I see Brent, you ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, well, I'm going to hand the mic over to Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you. This is Brent Allen Winters. Commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And do we really think, do we think that we can replicate what happened from 1776 to 1781? I mean, in the world back then, where there were about 3,000 Europeans in the American colonies that wouldn't tolerate, none of them, whether they were part of a church or not part of a church, they wouldn't tolerate people blaspheming the Bible. They wouldn't tolerate, certainly, sodomy, lesbianism, wholesale abortion. They weren't all pious people, but there were things they wouldn't tolerate. They didn't like each other either. The people in Massachusetts were racist. I don't mean racist against Negro slaves. I mean racist against people that weren't of English descent, that weren't purely Anglo-Saxon. They hated the people in Pennsylvania who were very much German and Dutch, a mixture. And those people hated the people in Connecticut, and the people in Connecticut hated the people in Massachusetts. Go back and read the history. It was a racial divide among white people, not only white people, but white people from Britain. A lot of them. But they wouldn't tolerate certain things. That's not America. America, Americans, the mass of them have put their brains in a 5-gallon bucket and fired a 45 slug into it. How do you know? Well, just look around. I'd said from the beginning, because it made sense, I don't know how true it is, I have a feeling it's true, that people are stupid enough to wear a diaper on their head. They're stupid enough to let the government, Bill Gates and some of those twerps and perverts, inject something into their bodies. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died. In the year, that's the way it starts, in the year that King Uzziah died. Well, what year was that? That was the year 753 B.C. Well, that might ring a bell with some of you. 753 B.C. That was the same year that Romulus and Remus, two brothers that had been suckled on a bitch wolf, founded the village of Rome on the Tiber River in present-day Italy, on the ruins of the Babylonian city named after its deity, Saturn. The name of the town was Saturnia. Rome was founded on top of it, same year that King Uzziah of Israel died. Isaiah was writing in the year that King Uzziah died. Isaiah, or as the Brits call him, Isaiah, or Isaiah, I forget how they do it, but it sounds funny to me. Isaiah admired King Uzziah and felt secure as long as King Uzziah was on the throne. There are many people that admire Donald Trump and feel better. They felt better when he was in the White House. I felt better when he was in the White House. I can tell you how to determine who's the best man out of two running for president. It's easy, especially once they get in. Just ask yourself this question, and it's always true. Did you feel freer when Donald Trump was in the White House? Did you feel freer to say what you thought? Or do you feel freer now, or less free, now that who knows who's pulling the levers of power? I don't even know. I've gotten to the point I don't even care. I'm out for myself at this point. Well, we'll get to that in just a minute. What does that mean? When I say out for myself, I mean out for the good of my country and my land. That's the only way I'm going to prosper. In the year that King Uzziah died, he says, Isaiah's death threatened to shatter Isaiah's world. There are people who, I saw people cry when they saw that Trump was giving it up. I saw them cry. Oh, they were on the public platform with me, bawling. I didn't criticize them. I felt sad too, but upon Isaiah entering the temple, after Uzziah died, God showed him that he said, I remain on the throne forever. And earthly rulers such as Uzziah, earthly rulers such as DJ Trump, come and go. They're just mortal men. And no matter how trustworthy men believe an earthly ruler to be, man is to trust God alone and no other. He's not even to trust himself. He's to trust no one but God alone. I have a habit, have had for 30 years, of asking people if they know the national motto of the United States. Boy, the answers I get are all over the lot. Some people think they know, and right away they'll say, El pluribus unum, el pluribus unum. I said, why do you think that's the national motto? He said, it's right on our coins, el pluribus unum. Out of many states, one country. Out of many, one. Oh, well, that's nice, but that's not our national motto. Our national motto is In God We Trust. It's right on our coins, too. In God We Trust. That means we trust in God. That doesn't mean we trust in each other. That doesn't mean we trust in government. That doesn't mean we trust in the Pope. That does not mean we trust even in the mother of Jesus Christ. That means we trust in God and Him alone. Him and no other, Him and no more. And He won't tolerate anything else, by the way. And if you, even if you swear an oath, you are to swear by Him and Him alone, Him and no other, Him and no more. And anything else, anything less, is paganism and idolatry. That's what Isaiah teaches, Isaiah the prophet in the Bible. Personal stability depends upon man trusting, leaning on God, the maker of all things, and Him alone. And the stability of your life depends upon holy, upon the stability of the one upon which you place your confidence. The stability of your life, and consequently, ultimately, of the life of your own country, depends wholly, not partially, wholly, on the stability of the one in which you place your confidence. And for this reason, a man's ultimate loyalty ought to be not to any ruling man, but to the will of the lawgiver, the will of God himself. Because to trust God is to trust what he says, trust what he tells you to do. It is to trust his will, and the will of the sovereign is law. And one's country will be the, well, you'll live long on the land, the country the Lord your God has given to you. For instance, General Eisenhower passed away on the 28th of March, 1969. Some of you remember. I remember it very well. I was in an assembly when General Eisenhower passed away. And the news came, and the speaker at the assembly was handed a note, and he spoke, and he said, everybody called him General Eisenhower, seemed like, that's what I always heard, didn't call him President, called him General Eisenhower. And a shade of sadness, you could feel it, came over the crowd. There was a band there, and as the quietness settled over the crowd, the band leader awakened the band, and the band played the Star Spangled Banner. It was a memorable moment for me. I was very young. But it made me realize how men and women hold in high esteem the leaders that they love, and rightly so. But we're not to trust them. We're to be loyal to them as long as they follow the law of the land. But our ultimate loyalty back then was more focused not upon men, not upon a man, but on the land and its law. And that's what drove and did drive and should drive men forward in confidence, not our leaders. According to SRN News Report of 14 July 2006, North Korea assured the world that North Koreans enjoy religious freedom. That's what they said. And at that time, and even at this time, the only public worship that North Korea permitted then and permits now, is of North Korea's founding revolutionary demagogue, Kim Sung-chu. The only public worship allowed there is worship of him. History teaches that a pervasive consciousness of common law first principles will check and turn away any such usurpation of state absolutism before it becomes accepted, is made official, and is enforced as it is in North Korea. Common law first principles will check and turn away any such usurpation of state absolutism before it becomes accepted, is made official, and is enforced. But common law foundations will only remain where sunk, where these foundations, the foundation footer of the foundation itself, are sunk into biblical bedrock. Are worthless, utterly worthless. Otherwise, I come from a place in the Wabash Valley where bricks are made. Bricks are along the Wabash River, brick factories, millions of bricks, good clay there for making bricks. Because bricks were so plentiful, all the old houses had brick foundations. The house I grew up in, old two-story frame farmhouse built in 1910, had a brick foundation. A lot of gumbo around there. Gumbo, that's just mud. Topsoil, a dozen feet deep, black, but mucky. Well, no place to set a house but on that muck. And they made the foundations out of brick. Within a few short years, I lived in a house like that. Everything was leaning. There weren't any square corners. Everything just started sinking in different places. We had a place in our living room that was bucked up clear across the living room. The boards were bucked up. Finally, when I was a teenager, Dad said, "We got to find out what's under there. What's bucking that board up?" As the house was sinking into the muck, we pulled the boards up, and there was a stump. I remember looking at it, and Dad said, "The man that whittled that stump down with an axe was left-handed." I said, "How do you know he was left-handed?" "Well, look at the way the axe hit the stump." He was good at things like that. Well, we pulled the stump out. It wasn't that big. It was probably 8 inches across. Put the boards back, and that way you wouldn't trip when you walk through the when you walk through the front room. But the foundation was no good, and the bricks were no good, and there was no footer. There was no sense putting a footer in. Wouldn't done any good. People just did the best they could. But without common law sunk into biblical foundations, bedrock, resting on it, everything's going to fall down. To sum up, if the final authority in one's life is some earthbound religious or political leader, then the rise or demise of that leader will either make one euphoric or shatter one's world. Let me say that again. If the final authority in one's life is some earthbound religious or political leader, then the rise or demise of that leader will either make one euphoric or shatter one's world. Isaiah said, remember, chapter 6, verse 1, "In the year that King Uzziah died," the year 753 B.C., "it shattered his world." But on the other hand, if a person recognizes his Creator to be God and the final authority in his life, he will know that God will always remain on the throne of creation, regardless of what earthbound rulers do. The worshiper will derive his stability, or lack thereof, from that which he worships. And everyone worships something or someone, even if it's his own self. But the principle is unavoidable. The worshiper will derive his stability, or lack thereof, from that which he worships. That's why the psalmist says of idolaters, that's someone who worships any created thing instead of worshiping the Creator, whether seen or unseen, an idolater is someone who worships worthyship. Worship is an old English word, contracted. Worthyship attributes worth to anything but the maker of all things. The psalmist says, "They that worship them," that is, created things, of whether living or dead, men or animals or whatever they are, "they that worship them," attribute worth to them, "shall be like unto them." Listen, whoever you attribute ultimate worth to, you will become more and more like that thing, or if it's a person, like that person. Would be to God that your final authority were the Godhead, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, the persons of the Godhead. Because whatever you worship, you'll be more like them. Donald Trump, oh, he may come back, he may not. We're thankful that we had a respite of free speech and a different kind of boldness to speak and write and to do. What shall we do now? God tells us to stand our ground. It's our country. Country, that means land. Our loyalty is not to be to the government. No, our loyalty is to the land that the Lord our God has given us. And our trust, that's a little bit different, is to Him and Him alone. Anything less and we're going down. Because you're going to place your trust, your confidence somewhere, even if you're stupid enough to place it in yourself. If you do that, you're going down, because you're going to go down. But if you're hanging on to, leaning on, the one that will never go down, the one who has never lost a battle, You're going to win. This is Brent, BrentAllenWinters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. I did not intend to say what I said. I intended to read and go over the militia book. I want to do that next time, maybe. So go to CommonLawyer.com and get that militia book, The Militia of the Several States, Unpacking the Four Militia Clauses of Our Constitution. You can also then go to the NLA the NLA website, and you can find there how to take a course using that book, because some of those that are concerned took that book, God bless their souls, took that book and wrote a study guide to go with it. And you can see how to obtain those on the NLA website and take that course. You'll understand the four militia clauses of our Constitution of the United States. This is key. Key to retaining our enjoyment of our freedoms. Not our freedoms. No, we can't lose those. It's the enjoyment of them we can lose if we're stupid. So let's do what God wants. This is what the Bible says. And our Constitution of the United States, the four militia clauses of it, track with and are rooted in the books, Numbers, and some in the book called Deuteronomy, the militia of the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 several tribes. This is Brent, CommonLawyer.com. As always, thank you to NLA letting me to say a few words. If I didn't, I would burst. Swell up, burst, and what I have said, my comments may or may not comport with the beliefs and views of the principles of NLA, but again, they're kind enough to let me say a few words back to John or Gerard.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate that. Okay, keep an eye out for Gerard in case he gets things going, and let me know, Terry or Jen.
Will do.
Meanwhile, we'll go forward with our Q&A here. We've got people in the queue. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? It's star 6 to get into the queue. Star 6, and I believe it'll tell you to put a 1 in. Star 6 and a 1. Let's take Kenneth from Washington State. You've got the mic. Go right ahead. Kenneth?
Is that for Kenneth?
That's you. Are you Kenneth?
I am the infamous Kenneth Wayne.
And I bet you're from Washington, huh?
Well, yeah, Washington State.
Yep, you got the mic.
When I first got onto the call, I was a little late getting on. They were talking about CPS issues. The first thing they need to do on those is go after the hospital for trafficking the children by taking the certificate of live birth and selling it and creating a birth certificate and thus selling the child into human trafficking. Then you can get control of your children back. I got some information on the website that I put up about that people can look at on the forums.
All right. You put it up on our website, National Liberty Alliance?
Yes. Okay. On the National Forum and the Washington Forum.
Okay. All right. We do have to be careful how we approach these things, and it is true what you're saying. They've actually deal with us and created things in their incorporations to make us chattel, livestock. And it's a pretty sad and sick situation, but there's truth to that. And, you know, it's really a serious problem when the state thinks they have more right over the children than the family of their children. That is pretty sad. And that's where we're at. And that should never be. But that's one of the main reasons and all the destruction caused by that we need to shut down these family courts and all these family services and, take a whole different look and a view on how we will deal with problems that people have within their families when they're looking for help. But they certainly don't solve problems. They are really, really good in making problems for life in the minds and the hearts of people, destroying people, just destroying, destruction. All right.
Every baby born in a hospital, the hospital gets paid $3,000 to $5,000 well, this is 20 years ago, to convert that child's certificate of live birth into a birth certificate and sell it.
Well, yeah. Again, the common people don't realize this, and even the people who are doing this don't even understand what they're doing. And of course, you know, there's two sides of things, and we do see and understand. You know, for these people, it's all about money and power, and that's what it's about. So, okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I've got a couple other comments as well, if you'd like.
Go right ahead. I'll give you one more, then if you want, you'll have to get back in line because we do have a few people, but go ahead with one more.
Okay. These gun control laws, every one of them I've ever seen is facially constitutional because it only regulates firearms. And if you go in the National Archives into the journals of Congress, you'll find out that firearms are the same or similar guns as arms, except that they are used for hire. I don't know about you, but I kind of think assassins might be someone you want to regulate.
If you could.
Paid assassins, paid gunslingers.
All right.
That's what firearms are. Gun for hire.
I did hear something about the meaning of firearms in the past. I forget exactly what it is, but that's an interesting point.
I've also put some information on the background research on that on the forums as well.
Okay. All right. I thank you for the call. Appreciate it, Kenneth. We'll take our next
call. I'll put some more information up based on what this call covered.
Okay, and if you want to hear this call, we do post these calls up on our website. As a matter of fact, if you go to our weekly call page, where you get the information on how to join us on our Monday night programs, right underneath it, we do have audio. We also have some video on some of the calls. Sometimes we have video calls, but most of them are audio calls. All that information is right here on this page, and we also have transcripts of our programs down below that, and the songs. We usually play one song when we come on to the program every Monday, and we post the lyrics on this page, too, down on the bottom, the different songs that we've been playing.
And here in Washington, when they run my name in the computer, comes back, do not arrest, do not detain, call risk management immediately.
Call who?
Risk management.
And what exactly is that?
That's the underwriters for their bonds. And
How did you accomplish?
On a speakerphone, and they told him, if that man is not happy when you leave, you don't have a job tomorrow.
How did you accomplish getting on such a list? I've heard of people, I don't know of anybody but I've heard of people claiming to be on that list. How did you get onto that list?
Because I've helped several people go after these corporate public officials for breach of oath of office contracts and forfeiture of their bond. When their bond is forfeit, they lose their job. And the bonding company seizes all their assets. And they wind up on the street with nothing, and they cannot get a job.
Were you able to press that issue?
Absolutely. 4 Supreme Court justices in Washington. And then we did the same thing to a sitting U.S. district judge. And the deep state got very upset. And I went through 7.5 years of torture in a place that doesn't exist as their retaliation for helping someone do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's very difficult to deal with these people. It's very difficult to win any court cases. I'm very surprised that you've got 4 judges that agreed with you. I mean, I guess there's still somebody out there. But
no, they didn't agree. The bonding company pulled their bonds because in the administrative process, they did not controvert the fact that their action breached their oath of office contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's like any contract. You breach a contract, you forfeit your bond, and then you cannot get a bondable position ever again.
Well, I don't know anybody that's been successful at that. I have often challenged and requested that bonds being posted in court cases, and they just totally ignore you, and there's really no way to get around it.
Look up what happened to Richard Guy, Barbara Durham, Philip Talmadge, and Gary Alexander, all former Washington Supreme Court justices, three of them chief justices.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to take the next call. I appreciate it. And maybe we'll talk another time. If you want, you can get back into the queue. But we have other people on the call.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Kenneth. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take our next caller. It is Kevin. You got the mic. Go ahead, Kevin.
Radio check. How are you reading me, John?
Good, good. 206, are you coming from Connecticut, maybe? Is that Connecticut, 206?
Nope, I'm
Queens.
Oh,
no, that's in Washington also. Oh, no, what am I saying? I'm looking at the wrong one. I'm looking back at Kenneth, so you don't have a phone number. You just got an email. Okay, go ahead, Kevin. What state are you from?
It's Queens, New York.
Queens,
Rockaway
okay, I remember
Beach.
You. I think we talked last week or the week before. Your
yes,
voice is
yes,
familiar.
We did, yeah. Yep, I was bringing up the same question again. Still looking forward to that government by consent book we paid for and wanted to find out it should be coming this month, I guess, huh?
Well, I'm hoping to push it along. As a matter of fact, I was going to call today, but I was so piled up with work I never got to it because they were supposed to be finishing up now on on the proof for formatting. And I haven't gotten it back yet, so I'm going to give them a call tomorrow, see where it's at. And after that, the only thing left is for me to review the formatting of the book and to be happy with it and then give the approval to go to print. So we're very close. But these people these publishing companies, they're not very helpful in really giving you a timeline or anything. They really aren't. And this is a pretty large company. You know, this is a company that's been around for 100 years. But I also, from my conversations with these people, the way they responded to me, some of my questions and concerns, I start to suspect that these publishing companies, I guess they must contract out the editing of the book. So they probably contract out the editing of the book for at the beginning of the first part of the book, and then they contract out the formatting of the book. And that's my perception. I don't know that for a fact, but the way they answered my questions and I kept digging and pushing and I wasn't getting anywhere, that was my conclusion. Because I wanted to speak with the people who are doing the formatting at this point. But anyway, hopefully it's going to go soon, and it's being published by Dorrance. So they've been around for quite some time. It's a very well-known publishing company.
Okay, John, looking forward to it. Thank you.
Me too. So, thank you. Okay, next caller. David, you've got the mic. Go right ahead, David.
Hey, good evening. Can you hear me?
David, what's your state? What state are you from?
I'm from Florida.
Okay, Florida. David from Florida.
Anybody else wants
to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1, get into the queue. Go ahead, David.
All right, thank you. I actually started practicing common law about 7 years ago. I'm actually helping a friend of mine right now with a seizure of his property from Broward County Sheriff's. We've been trying to move his case in common law, but we're getting a lot of resistance because the judge and the prosecutor or the attorney for Broward County Sheriff's is involved. And
the reason why they're not moving you over is because there is no common law courts. They've abrogated them back in through the 1934 Enabling Act, and in 1938 the Supreme Court approved and passed. They gave them the power and the authority to write their own rules, and in those rules, in Rule 2, they wrote that the law and equity has been fused together now under the term civil law. So we're under civil law at this point. Babylonian law is where we're at. Roman law. As a matter of fact, if you talk with a lawyer, and I've talked with many, many lawyers, and I've been told this by many lawyers that they believe we're under Roman law, Roman civil law. And that's pretty sad that they don't even understand what that means. That's what they claim, and that's where we're at. So you're not going to, and if you did get a court that looked like a court of law, it would be a stacked jury. They stack the juries, and people are criminals. They need to be in jail.
So I was planning on charging the judge and the attorney with contempt of court for fraud on the court, because their paperwork and their statements are contradictory. The document that started the case doesn't even have the original attorney's signature on it. It looked like they scribbled some Donald Duck on it. So I've tried to address that as well as several other issues, because there's no jurisdiction in the matter. And when we challenged jurisdiction, the judge said that within the four corners of their document that she found that there was jurisdiction.
Yeah, but it has to state what the jurisdiction is on the case itself. Once challenged, the jurisdiction must be proven or decided is the words. Must be decided, which means it has to be proven. So being decided, obviously that judge believes they have jurisdiction, so they can't decide. But you're not going to get anywhere with it. I mean, it's possible to get somewhere with it. We've been seeing so many cases. We've tried so many times. A lot of these people you can't get through. I mean, we've had a couple of successes. Maybe you can back off your mic a little bit. You're a little close to your mic. You're over-modulating.
I'm sorry.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Did you want to respond back?
I thought about either charging them with contempt of court or opening a lawsuit against them personally for usurping their jurisdiction and violating their oath of office. Basically what the guy before was saying, possibly going after their bonds to see if that would be a viable route.
Mm-hmm. What court level are you in? Is this the state court or county court?
This is the county court.
County court.
For Broward County. So they're pretty much run by the Broward Sheriff's Office.
Mm-hmm. By the Sheriff's Office, huh?
I believe so. They're the ones that handle all the the inmates.
Well, they're the enforcement. Yeah, they're the enforcement. They're not the court, though. They're the enforcement in the court. It's an uphill battle. And to go through that case, once the judge violates your rights, one of your unalienable rights, and you want to take that to issue, then that becomes, if it's a constitutional issue, if it is, right of due process or fraud on the court or something like that, denial of due process or hijacking you to jurisdictions unknown, all of that is a violation of your due process, which makes it a federal case. Take it into the federal court, but they're all compromised too.
Yes,
when we get to the other side, we're not going to get justice. We can build our cases and take them as far as we can get, and then revisit them on the other side, meaning being after the arrests take place, and the potential of justice is there. But the potential, it will be the potential of justice once we get onto the other side. It's up to the people to bring that justice into the courts and take control of the courts. Our courts need to be controlled by the people. They're the people's court. It has nothing to do with our government. none of these appointed or elected people or individuals have any business making any judgment or decisions in our courts. So these are courts of law. They belong to the people. They're the sovereign's court. And the people decide. The people decide whether there's a crime. The people decide whether guilt or innocent. The people decide the facts and law. The people decide how to restore the injured and the party, whether it requires incarceration or not. The people decide these things, not a person working for the government. That's and people, you know, there should be a feeling or a realization something is wrong. We give a guy this cape and he goes up there and sits on his desk way up there and just rules over us like the Lord. I mean, what are we, crazy? But we have to realize there's something wrong with that picture.
You know? I agree, and that's why every step of the way we document everything and we actually file it into the case. So we're making clear our record for future.
Right. Well, that's the way to do it. Just make that case for the future, because that's what I look for. It's going to be dealt with later on. And I don't think later on is too far away. So, all right. Any other comments or thoughts?
No. I've been watching you guys for a while. I don't think I've quite joined yet, but I think that's my next step.
Okay.
Because yeah, I see what you guys are doing. I think it's great.
Yeah, think about getting some committees of safety going in your county, because that's the only way we're going to take this nation back, is the people have to do it from the grassroots. They have to be educated to do it. They have to know what to do. And we're teaching them. We've got handbooks to teach every step of the way. And we give examples and framework, paperwork, work filled out or added to, or whatever they need to do. And take the power and the authority on the grassroots level. Okay, David, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
You too. Okay, let's take our next caller, Kevin from New York. And by the way, nobody in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue. Kevin, you got the mic.
Yeah, you already took my call. Thank you.
Did I? Oh, okay. All right, anyway, nobody in the queue. If anybody's got anything, star 6 to get into the queue. And we'll take some questions. Otherwise, maybe we'll take a look at something. I don't have a plan on anything particularly. We can look at these handbooks, you know. There we go, people in the queue. All right. Jim from PA will take you next. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Jim.
Hello, John. This is Jim, Pennsylvania.
How you doing?
Okay. Hey, listen, we had extended an invitation to you to speak at our state meeting up in Tioga County, Pennsylvania. It's the borders New York.
Yeah, I spoke with, was it Goodridge, I think his name was?
Yes.
Yeah. Who is he? Is he the president?
Chairman.
Of the group, or the chairman? Okay, the chairman. Okay, yeah, I did speak with him today. I called, Jan asked me to call. I guess you had sent a message to Jan. And I did go through everything with what we're doing. You know, I told them whatever they're doing, you know, you should continue doing whatever you think you need to do. We're not going to be supporting any parties, but we definitely will help you and teach you about committees of safety and organizing your county. And you know, I talked with him for quite some time. And, you know, and I also laid out the picture, you know, our position is that parties are destructive and we have to follow what our founding fathers had to say about parties. You know, I went through some of the things that Washington has said concerning parties, and he had a list of things. I mean, goodness, Washington had a lot to say about these parties. And all of our founding fathers were in agreement and one accord with this a position of parties are destructive and we shouldn't have them. We are a common law republic. We are the only true natural law republic in the world. And there's only been one prior to us, and that was in 1400 BC, the nation of Israel. And we are the second a natural law republic. And that brings us everything under common law. And A natural law republic does not need parties. The last thing we need is parties, because all they do is war one against the other, try to fight, for more power, and it's nothing really but division. So anyway, I did speak to him about that. I said, but I would not make a big thing about that. But if it comes up, I would respond appropriately. But we need to use the parties that are at hand at this point, and they're using that party to take back our nation. We have to get the people involved. And then we have to get, once we take control and the people are in power, then we can dismantle the parties, get rid of them. Right now, they're private organizations. They have no real authority anyway. The Supreme Court has ruled that many, many times here in New York. And they just have no power, no authority to really make any decisions for anything. But they operate under their rules and purely under their rules as a private group. But once the true elected committee man becomes elected, they get cut off from that. They have to cease and desist from doing those actions. As far, you know, they could do what they want as a party, but they cannot have any power or authority as committeemen. They don't have right now anyway, because they're not elected. And as I mentioned before, maybe there are some states that still have them, but I haven't found that yet. And we are trying to get some research going on that to see if there are any states at all out there that are doing it right, or at least close to doing it right. But there is only one way to become elected, and that is elected out of your election district, and it's very, very clear and cut and dry. And we haven't found anyone doing it the proper way. But in any event, also on top of that, if we want to be, and again, I wouldn't bring this up to that group, particularly, but I wouldn't avoid it if they asked, But the bottom line is that, and it's unfortunate, all the other parties don't really have much power. They don't have a presence in the Board of Election. Everything's stacked against them of getting a presence in the Board of Election. The requirements that they need to go through, the hoops that they need to go through, very, very difficult to achieve. I think it can be achieved, but it would have to be a huge movement. I think the closest it could have been achieved is if Trump went along with creating a third party, another party. Or whether he signed on with a constitutional party or some other party and worked out of that, then that would really have a good chance of getting to that point. But that would only create more problems. It would be a third party, something else to be infiltrated, and that is the problem. If we don't do it properly and do it under bring committeemen in under elections and to take control, which is the people on the grassroots, and educate them to understand what it's all about and how it works, and educate them in the Constitution so that they can ask these people who want to become elected in whatever office they're running for to see if they're statesmen by quizzing them on the Constitution. And you can't quiz someone on the Constitution if you yourself don't know the Constitution. So all these things, of course, we're addressing. But the bottom line is, and we have to stay true to what we're doing, is we have to get rid of parties at the end of the day. But we will use parties to get into power. He seemed very interested in a lot that I had to say. We spoke about quite a few things, a lot of that. We spoke for some time, too. But at the end of the day, I think maybe he felt, because we left it with, I'm not going to speak out there. The invite did not come after the call. I told him I wouldn't be able to personally attend, but if he wanted me to speak, I would speak over Skype or something, or Zoom or whatever. But I think it shocked him, our position in the party. I think he knew what I was saying was correct, because my conversation with him, I think he's kind of realizing certain things. Maybe he realized it before, but maybe he's just realizing it now. Is that a pretty big group? Are they in one county, or are they, what's going on with that party?
It's the whole state.
The whole
state party.
Yeah, it would have been nice to get their ear and have a conversation, and I said we would support whatever they're doing if that's what they want to do, is do the committeeman thing and try to do things from there. But there'll be no power in that. But they could try. But nevertheless. the bottom line is the people who are running our political process right now, they call themselves committeemen, are unelected. They're private citizens, just like anyone else, a private organization. And so, you know, we can form and do the same thing, and with or without a name, just call ourselves the committeemen, and pursue the election, the proper election of the committeemen at some point when that opportunity comes up in our states to fill out a designating petition and then run for that position. And it's usually unopposed. I don't think we'd have any opposition to that at all. So we could really take over a state very quickly if you get enough people running. As a matter of fact, we could take over a state with five people, because that's what's running every state right now. Five people run every state. And of course, they answer to someone else on the national end. But that's exactly how it works. It's called the executive committee. And there could be six or seven, but generally it's five. And all we have to do is elect five people in every state and to take those executive positions, and we get to appoint everyone. But we get to appoint with authority, because we would be elected committeemen. Big difference. And a court could no longer make a ruling claiming that we owe our being in existence because of the party rules, because that's what they've said to their own party rules, which is a private organization, a private corporation. Has nothing to do with the people. So we being on behalf of the people could do the same thing and get some things done. Look what the people out in California did, coming together and acting as committeemen to press forward and get the recall for the governor. And they got over 1 million signatures on that, mentioned that earlier. So the people can do it. That's part of the job of the committeeman, is recall, and it should be used often. Use it a few times, and believe me, they'll stop the nonsense. And a lot of them will probably flee office, because they're all criminals in there for really, you know, getting power and money. And money is power, of course, also. Anyway, so
John,
I don't know if
I
anything will come of it, or maybe you'll invite me another time.
Okay, so there was no arrangements made then, is that right?
No arrangements, no.
Okay. Hey, listen,
I was hoping to be able to talk with them.
Okay, but change the subject about the committeeman. Over 20 years ago, I was elected to a Republican committeeman. I was on the ballot over 20 years ago. I didn't understand everything back then, but I was elected. But
there's a very specific process that must be followed. Okay, and you know, and we have people here that get onto the ballot. Very, very rarely do they get on the ballot, but they do get on the ballot. They really often don't. They'll try to fight it out in court, and usually that accomplishes the goal. But if not, then they both go onto the ballot. But the ballot actually nominated them, not the designating petition. And then they go up for election by the party, which still brings it back to a private corporation. That's the way it worked in New York. And we've seen a lot of states working the same way. I was looking at some states. They don't have anything on the details of electing a committeeman at all, that particular position. And it's not necessary anyway. You know, the position exists, and it's an unalienable right to have a representative in order that we can have a government by consent with a person who is not necessarily political. We shouldn't be political or, you know, get involved in politics and, you know, making, you know, supporting this group over that group or anything. Our whole position as committeemen really should be looking to get statesmen in and making sure that they fulfill their oath and obey their oath, and if not, recall them. That's what the committeeman's supposed to be doing. There's no need to make an argument or a discussion on the Second Amendment or the First Amendment. That's already solved. Those are unalienable rights. Leave them alone. Don't touch them. And anybody using an elected position as a platform in order to take away our rights or to lessen our rights, eventually take them away, of course. Anybody doing that belongs in jail, because that's what the law says. So Schumer and all those people that are up there trying to beat up the Second Amendment, they should all be in jail. And if things were running properly and the people understood that, they'd be in jail. we would put them in jail because they're destroying the very government that that they are trying to use to destroy our Constitution. I guess that's the final line. They should be in jail. Anything
John,
else?
John, one other point. Let me make one other point.
Sure.
And this was a while ago. Jan and I had discussed this. I asked a question once. It wasn't a question. It was a comment about a bipartisan vote in Congress. And here's my question. Does a bipartisan vote include third parties and independent voters? You know, because they play it up. The point I was trying to make is when Congress always says about a bipartisan vote, they make it sound like everybody in the whole United States is in agreement with it. A bipartisan vote just means the Republicans and the Democrats. Is that your understanding?
Well, of course. When they're talking about bipartisan vote, they are talking about the Republicans and the Democrats. They're leaving out any of the other third parties that you would be around, you know, constitutional, libertarian, or anything of that nature. That doesn't even exist in their thinking when they make those statements. At least I don't believe it is. But look at, in today's environment with all of the criminal activities going on in our legislative body there in out there in Washington, it doesn't mean anything even if it's bipartisan. First of all, again, they shouldn't be grouping because that's what they do. They form two groups, one against the other, and they never end up, they never stop. They just keep bickering and fighting. You know, and again, they're trying to get more power than the other side, and they break the law to do it. They do things that they shouldn't be doing. They take money that they shouldn't be taking, and they made it all legal to do that. But it's legal there. Maybe in Washington D.C., maybe it could be considered legal there because they're a state unto their own. But that doesn't mean it's legal in our states. I think we should arrest them when they come home, you know, congressmen and even senators that are taking all this Fugazi funny money in order to support the will of the special interest groups instead of the people that they were elected to go and represent. So they should go to jail. That should be illegal. As far as I'm concerned, it's called a bribe. Being paid for their vote. They don't believe, or it doesn't matter. They're being paid for their vote, period. So, but anyway. All right, anything else?
Joanna, let me close with one comment. I was really pushing to try to get somebody from NOA to speak to our group.
I would
NOA
like to have
strongly.
Done it, but, you know, one of the problems is the fact that they're really focused. It's like the Republican Party asking me to come out. I mean, or any party, really, but I mean, even the Republican Party. I would make it clear to them, sure, I'll speak, but, you know, here's what our position is on this, and if it comes up, we're definitely going to make the point, and we're going to talk a little bit about it because it's part of what we're doing. The end results at the end of the day is to get rid of parties. Hey, do you guys agree or what? Of course, they don't. They're not the Republicans. But I know what these people are trying to do. You know, maybe they'll come around and realize and maybe get on board with us. And again, they're not going to get any power bringing committeemen into a constitution. Is that what it's called, a constitutional party?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not going to get any power by doing that because they won't get a seat at the Board of Election. Take here New York alone. I mentioned this earlier. These positions, these people at the Board of Election, they are the state committeemen, and they're elected by the party. No such position even exists. Nowhere in history can you find that, state committeemen. Now, it is true, you know, you do get people that sit on the state committee, but that's the county chairman that's sitting on the state committee. Every county, brings a chairman and elects a chairman and a co-chairman and a secretary and a treasurer. And it's set up, to do the business of the people. And so that chairman, or the co-chairman, if the chairman can't make it, that chairman goes up to the state meetings whenever they're called into the capital of the state. And in our case, we have 62 counties, so we have 62 chairmen, or the either chairman of the county committee or It's all in the law. It's referred to as the general committee, which refers to the county, and so that's the state committee. There's no special person elected to that position, but those on the state committee, okay, there's 62 of them in each party here in New York State, and they come together on the state committee, and they elect, okay, they elect, and it may not necessarily be the people on those boards, but they elect the executive committee. And the executive committee is a group of five or so people, and they control it all. They control it all. And they decide who gets onto the ballots. They make it look real good as if the people are deciding, but they're not.
After the beep, you know? Please record a message. Afterwards, your message...
Okay, Jan, thank you. Okay, anyway, I guess that's the end. Anything else before I move on?
No. It's good talking to you. Wish I could have met you in person up in Tyler.
Yeah, it would have been nice to come. Well, I wouldn't have been able to come out anyway. Like I told him, I'd be able to do it... over the line, but I am planning to travel the state, and I might go a little into Pennsylvania and Connecticut and Jersey, but I'm planning to organize my state to make sure we get to committees of safety in all of our counties. So I definitely will be touring New York soon, and I'll be doing that
next
spring
month,
or the fall.
Next month,
spring, I think, is the 22nd, isn't it? Or the 21st. But go ahead, what were you saying?
Next month in Michigan, we're going to have a national one. I would urge you to try to talk to some of the party leaders to speak at that. It's a two-day, national meeting for all the states, all the everybody.
Sure, I would come out to speak to the. When are they looking to do that? And this is with the Constitutional Party.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to talk with them to make them understand first the leaderships. So that they do understand, what we're doing here. We're not going to veer away from what we're doing. We're not going to change our message in what we're doing. We will support them doing for what they're doing, but, hey, there's lots of other things you need to do, and we can work together on that. It might be a little bit touchy because, again, it's like me going to talk to the Republican Party to tell them, hey, we're taking over the Republican Party so we can destroy it, get rid of it, because it don't belong in a natural law republic. Of course, that wouldn't go over very well, and they wouldn't like that. But I do know that the hearts of the people are to try to fix the problem. So
it's a good message, and that's why Roy was urging you to come and talk to our people. I think they would be... they would be the most receptive of what you had to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Constitution Party people.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot of attorneys in there I wish you could have talked to.
Oh, boy, they hate me. Yeah. Look, I destroy their education because, they've been taught lies. There is a place for equity, and they learn equity, but it's filled with so much garbage, so, who knows what is where. It's a mess. Our law is a mess. The bottom law is no written law belongs in a court of law, period. But contracts, of course, do, and that would bring equity into a court of law if necessary, if that's what the case is about, an equity case. But it becomes criminal, then it goes into a court of law. I would go. When are they looking to have this national meeting?
Yeah, I don't have that date in front of me, but I think it's around
midsummer, late summer?
April.
April, okay. Yeah, I would very, very strongly consider going out if they wanted me to, but I would want to have a conference with the leadership before, so, they're not surprised by anything I might say.
Well, at this point, we're not afraid of hurting somebody's feelings, are we?
Right. Well, I'm not, no.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that neither am I. I mean, we're past that.
I don't want them to be surprised, certain things. Again, I would have to have a conference. I would want them to really understand what we're doing. And let me think. If anybody are really interested, share with them our Committee of Safety handbook, because I think that would cover all of our handbooks together, because then you could take out the committee man handbook. And that the committee man handbook is very good because that's what they're involved with. They're trying to build that political process to get the committee man going, to get that seat at the table with the other two parties. That's what they're working for, and that's the committee man process. So I could teach them how to do it right to begin with, okay? And remember, coming in as a committee man, even in another party, well, you could work with Republicans that come in and you have the same goal. So that would be powerful. So there could be a meeting place in our thinking and what we're doing, but they do have to understand that our intentions is to gain power through this committee man process using whatever is out there, in this case the Republican Party particularly, but they can use that party and work with us. I mean, look at when we did what we did here in New York, we did the Republicans and Democrats came together. And we had our statewide conference in Kingston, New York, and we hammered out party rules. I recently went back and altered all of that to call it committee man rules instead of party rules, because the intention at the end of the day, and again, we were in one accord, focused in on the Constitution, Democrats and Republicans. So, of course, we had some, reasonable Democrats that were somewhat conservative. Obviously, they were somewhat conservative. But in any event, that's what we did, and we accomplished that goal. And if we were big enough and we had enough people involved and we had a courts of law open, we could have taken power of New York. But none of those things happened, particularly the court of law. There was no court, nor did we have enough experience at the time to really fight the case in the courts. But it couldn't be won in the courts, not in this environment here. We can work together, but again, they have to understand that at the end of the day, once the people are in power, we only need one committee man for every election district, and we don't need one for each party. We need to get rid of parties altogether, because again, parties divide. I can't think of one reason. You know, there's some people I hear them talk, and people who are in the know, so to speak. But they talk and they really believe that we have to have this two-party system, and they're sold on the fact that we shouldn't have three parties. That's a problem. But they really think that we need a two-party system. I'd like to know why. What is it that we have to do that we need parties to make arguments to change things? We don't have to change anything. Well, let's just enforce the law. If the Constitution needs to be changed, the people, usually through the state governments, could start to realize that and try to work things out and go through the proper process to make a change. But before we make any changes, I say, let's exercise the Constitution till its fullest extent and then see if there's any problems with it. And I am convinced we'll find none. I think the document is pretty solid. So, but yeah, it's possible. If they're interested in thinking a little different and a little out of the box, we can help them in power and work with Republicans and then at the end of the day, abolish parties where the people are in charge, period. We don't have all this BS. We see the narratives and everything going on. It was necessary for them to create parties in order to destroy a nation. That's part of the plan. So, okay. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Okay, good night.
All right. Linda from VA, it looks, Virginia.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead, Linda.
Okay, well, I just had some musings or observations, and that is... you touched on it earlier, but back in the election, I remembered I kept thinking, we need a success, we need a win, and we really didn't get one, but I remembered thinking that, and so I was thinking that there's a couple of good things happening, and that is that the states that are nullifying the executive orders. So they're basically putting, nullification into play.
Right. I thought they were trying to go through the courts.
Well, however they're doing it, whether they're successful or not, I don't know.
Well,
but
be successful if they just came together and made a decision and go forward with that decision and do what they want to do. Look at the states down along the border and the states bordering, behind them and so on, and all of the nation, really. But all the states, as many states as possible, should come together and say, hey, we're all going to support this war. Let's take care of business. Let's finish what Trump started, and let's go forward. And they might even be able to steal control over the funding that was already made available already and move that way. That'd be about the only block. But Bannon showed that there's a way to get around that too. Let the people do it. And let's seal up the borders and save this nation from destruction. And forget about them. Let them take us to court. And ignore the court's decision too. Look at the states are sovereign. They're sovereign. They don't have to agree and believe and go forward with what the United States Supreme Court says. First of all, you know, the United States Supreme Court is totally corrupt. That it's been proven already. We got three justices that stood the line, and the rest of them they sold us out. And it's a shame that those two last two, Kavanaugh and Amy, both of them. What's Amy's last name? Amy Barrett? No.
Barrett.
Barrett? Is it Barrett?
Barrett.
Okay. Yeah, so
Coney
Barrett and Kavanaugh sold us out. They sold us out. They should have stood up. Look at, you know, when you take these positions, and you should be ready to give your life, okay? You take positions like that, okay? And that's what our founding fathers did. And those are the people, they had their heart into it, and they knew what had to be done, and they knew what was right, and they believed God would protect them, and that they were doing the righteous, the just thing, and therefore they'd receive the blessings of God. They believed that.
Well, on that, I think it may have went back to the Supreme Court doesn't want to get involved in politics and all that stuff. I don't know.
Politics.
I'm just guessing,
yeah,
you know.
Well, yeah, but they can say all they want. They told Trump he didn't have standing. Go figure that out. They told the states they didn't have standing. Figure that one out. No, they were cowards is what they were. There's nothing, as far as I'm concerned, we are ready to consider an indictment against these judges. And we're waiting to
shocking.
Get to the other side to make that decision on whether we're going to go and call for a potential indictment on all of these judges.
But my point on this is the nullification. I've seen it on the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. I've seen it maybe, you know, like you say, on the wall and different things. And so it to me, it's representative that that knowledge is happening and that
it's moving a little bit, but not enough, but a little bit.
Well, not enough. I mean, the Democrat states would never engage. But
well, I wouldn't too quick to say that because, believe me, look at the Democrats control states because they control the city and they control the illegal aliens and people who are mindless and brainless, and they get them to fill out the papers to go out to vote, then they get them out to vote. And then, of course, they fix the machines and everything else. I've heard word, and I do believe this, you know. I mean, I wouldn't say I believe it. I tend to believe it. I lean towards this. I believe that Trump won every single state. I think he won New York, and I think he won California. And I'm not the only one that thinks that. I'm hearing people that are more closer to the know making that kind of an accusation. So, more people will stand up for liberty than you realize, and this republic. And the problem is we're confused and we lack the knowledge. We're confused. And you
right,
know,
but that's what I'm talking about. Is this exercising of nullification against these executive orders, and then the second thing is. The people moving against this is just shocking to me. I find it actually funny because the people moving against Cuomo, Newsom, Whitmer, they were the primary leaders in that whole election fraud, really. And it's just so shocking that. Now they're all being tossed out, you know, or at least it's in.
Well, yeah, he's a sacrificial lamb. They threw him under the bus. And look at this is no surprise. This is what communists do. You know, all of the useful idiots they use to get into office when they're finished with them, they can't be trusted. They take them out back and put a bullet in their head. That's the way they work. That's what they do. So I'm not surprised that they threw him under the bus. I was just confused on why they did it. But I was listening to. I was listening to Dave from X22. I think it was today's report, or it might have been yesterday's report. Well, it wouldn't have been today's. It was yesterday or the day before. because I didn't hear Monday's yet. It comes on too late for me to hear before this program. But in any event, I believe it was Dave from X22 who talked a little bit about this issue. And the problem was, is light was being shined on the other governors, okay? And so because of what was breaking, you know, with this governor, and there was a lot of pressure on, because he was kind of leading the way on killing people in nursing homes here, and then this thing broke with, you know, the sexual abuse, or sexual, what do they call that, abuse, whatever it is, in a workplace. Then they started to build that up, and now the news is running with it really heavy, because it's smoke and mirrors to keep people focused here and not over there. They're busy doing other work, but there's other things coming up they're trying to cover up.
Okay, so yeah, I did hear that.
That kind of sounds, you know, sensible, but that might be it.
It's not just him, though. It's Newsom, him, and Whitmer they're after now. So I just feel like the people are learning how to get a voice. That's what needs to happen. You know, and if we can't get justice in the courts, then, you know, it's like we realize we have to go another way. And so I think that's it. I think these are all good indications of the people, you know, exercising their rights and you know, what works, I guess, what will work.
Well, if we don't have justice in our courts, rest assured we have no liberty. End of subject, that's a fact. And that's where we're at today. But yes, you know, look, there's some counties and even some states that claim themselves to be, what it was called, gun-free zones. You know, they're not going to apply any of these laws concerning guns on the people. Well, there's nullification right there when the state steps up and says, hey, you can run all your federal laws you want, but it doesn't work in this state. And if they worked together and the sheriffs understood and they were educated and they were on board, they'd prevent any federal agents from coming into their counties to arrest anyone. As a matter of fact, if I was the sheriff of my county, and every sheriff should do this, I would notify the federal government, hey, anytime you come in with a warrant into my county, give me a call because I want to participate with it. Because I want to check out to see, I want to see that there's a sworn affidavit, that there's a wet ink signature from the judge, and that it's lawful. Okay, I want to see all that first before I would permit them to go and execute a federal warrant. And that would prevent them from coming into doing anything, because none of these federal warrants are lawful at all. I mean, I'm sure there's some here or there, but it's very rare. Generally speaking, they're out of control. They're chasing down some illegal gun, thing going as far as transportation from state to state, and something with guns or something. You know, well, yeah, that would be a legal thing, and that would be something that would be lawful for them to come in. But they should be letting the sheriff know, hey, we're coming in, because he's the guy that's in charge to make sure that the law, and that's the law of the land, that is applied. And nobody's abused, nobody's rights are abused, and that due process is in place. That's their job.
Well, basically, you know, the people do not have a voice, and they don't want us. They don't want the people to have a voice.
Absolutely not.
So it's like every turn we take, you know, we're being censored, whether it be at the courts or the media or wherever, you know. So that's the huge struggle, is for the people to get a voice, because I post this all the time. We outnumber them. Outnumber them, and they know it. Well, that's the only power we have, is the consensus of the people.
Right.
You know,
and again,
that's the only thing they're afraid of.
That's why there must be a place to facilitate the communication, the organization, and the education of the people on the grassroots level. And that's, of course, what we're doing. And when we hit critical mass, and I think we're very close, because, again, we're coming up to 10,000 members at this point. And if we get interviews, if we get interviews on, there's lots of places I'm trying to get an interview with, and they have millions of people listening in, and some of these people are really, really focused in on being patriots and trying to figure out the answer, the solutions, you know, to the problem. I don't know if you're familiar with Periscope, That news, I don't know how long they've been around. I only discovered them about a month ago, but I'm finding them very interesting. They got a lot of good news coming out of that. But it's at periscope.com or something like that. Let me see if I can...
No, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, hang on. Let me see if I could just find that.
I'll look it up.
It is...
I know. I do listen to X22.
Independent news. It's American Media Periscope. So if you go to American Media Periscope on that page there, this is it here. And they got a lot of good stuff, a lot of good people, a lot of good interviews, a lot of good news on this site. And so I've been listening to this. Now, I was listening to a program where some of these guys got together and they were talking, and they had some people calling in and so on. And they were talking about, you know, trying to fix the problem, looking for the solution. And I, you know, I need to get be interviewed by these people because we have the solution. And I think, I don't know what their, listenership is, you know, how big they are. But they do look with the people that got involved and what's going on and the stories they got coming out and the way they produce things. Anybody who finds them, I think, will realize that it's a place to get good news from. And so if they're not big now, they will become big. But I think they got a large listenership, and we have an opportunity to really hit critical mass by being interviewed on a program like this. And this isn't the only one. There's others, you know. We want to get on to X22. You know, we'd love to be interviewed by him. He does some good interviewing, too. And our message would ring. And then at that point, we get people really coming in here and hit that critical mass with people that are really want to do something and get this job done. And that's what we need to do. And we need to do it now. You know?
Yeah, it just reminds me of like herding cats. So, you know, everybody's sort of going in their own direction, and it's it's difficult to,
there's a lot of people out there in soapboxes, and a lot of people leading a lot of people astray the wrong way, down the wrong path, and it's done for numerous reasons. I think the biggest one is ego, but it's also done for money and other things, and so people are confused. People don't know. They don't know what the truth is, and they don't know enough to ask enough questions because they see something written. They think it's true. That doesn't make it true at all, you know. And we need to learn, whenever we're looking at anything important, we need to look to make sure we can trace whatever we're looking at to the sources. If we can't trace it to the sources and they don't make that source available to us, then we can't believe anything they say.
That's why it's so important to stick with the Constitution, the principles, the Bill of Rights, and, you know, it's like the Bible. It's
absolutely.
It you know, it's ever standing. I mean,
well,
it's
kind of like the Bible, but you know, the bottom line is, if we did follow it, we would be very successful, and we would receive the blessings of God, because only a morally minded people would follow it to the letter, and our founding fathers said it. You know, we built a nation that's only good for morally minded people. It'll suffice no other. They said. I'm trying to think who said that, but one of our founding fathers said that. It'll suffice no other, and. You know, so, you know.
Well, I know. I stick with, like, the 10th Amendment Center, the, you know,
it is good.
What
yep.
you all are preaching or putting out. And
they got a list of the best books out there. Anybody that doesn't know, you know, get out there. So.
Who's that? 10th Amendment?
10th Amendment, yeah. I think it's the 10th Amendment that's got the books, isn't it? Let me take a... I don't see my books around here. It's on my bookshelf. But anyway.
He really puts out some good stuff.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Like the Cato, you know, like Cato, I look at that, and they're sort of, I don't know, sometimes I agree with them, sometimes I don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of wishy-washy
about
it. I'm
thinking of the Constitutional Studies. The 10th Amendment is a good group, too, anyway. But no, I'm thinking the Constitutional Studies. Oh, goodness. Terry, do you remember the name of that, the website for that, for the Constitutional Studies? You can go get
that
the book.
National Center for Constitutional Studies?
That's it. National Center for Constitutional Studies. So it's
I think I have run across that.
NCCS.net, I think, or com, but I think it's net for some reason. But in any event, if you go there, they got the best list of reading books. I mean, they got The Making of America, The Real Thomas Jefferson, The Real George Washington, The Real Benjamin Franklin, The 5,000-Year Leap. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Great, great books. Great, great books. And these are all these books, people should be reading these books because it will enlighten you on who we are as a people, you know. I was so impressed and I learned so much just from the one book. You know, I read Making of America, but I read The Real Thomas Jefferson, and I was just so impressed. And every, you know, and what this guy did, Klaus and some other person, I forget the name of the other person who wrote a lot of these books.
It's W. Cleon Skousen.
And, you know, what's the other person?
I'm looking now.
Right. Well, they really did some research and working, and they've given all of the sources. It's the Real Thomas Jefferson because they're responding by the letters of the day between our founding fathers and many other people and things that they were doing that's in history that's documented. That's what we're looking at, and we're understanding who these people really are, not what they're saying in the history books they are. As a matter of fact, we as parents and grandparents, when we get our schools back, we should require that even in the school books on the lower level and on the lower grades, even in the school books, there should be sources showing where these sources come from. And I have seen textbooks with that, but not enough, and not really on the matters that really are important. So when it talks about our founding fathers, he said, she said, we need to know who said it and when they said it and where it is that we can go look at it physically, literally, reference, points. We should teach our children to think that way, check it out.
I think that what people need to understand is the government is like a sleeping giant, you know, and to move it is like moving a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just go and do something once. You have to be relentless. And that's what we have. I see this as it is affecting change, but it's so slow. And that's the reason, is because it's very difficult to move the government in any direction because they're entrenched. They're entrenched in their, you know, the way they do things and their policies and principles and all that. But if you keep hammering, this is what we have to do. We have to keep hammering it. Hammer nullification, you know, hammer the principles of the Constitution and just, you know, at every turn highlight that it's in violation of the Constitution. And if we keep doing that, I really think we're going to see, you know, a lot of progress. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have a leg to stand on. We're standing on the rock.
Well, yeah, it is true. You get that out like a narrative, keep hammering something, of course. But, you know, they try to outdrum us, of course. That's why we got to get rid of them, too. We got to get rid of them because they're just destructive. But nevertheless, that's true. People need to become educated. I was watching an interview today with this psychiatrist who was being interviewed on valuetainment. I think it was just a recent interview. It was March 12th or something like that. I forget this guy's first name. I know his last name is David from Valuetainment. And in that interview, they got talking about, actually what's going on in technology and how people are communicating. And they referred to, and I got to go watch this, they referred to a video, a documentary that was done that's up on Netflix, and it's called Social Dilemma. And it talks about the problem of Facebook and the real destruction, what it's all about, and it's all about control, and they're doing mind control on the people, and they're just taking the herd.
Right, they're globalists. They're globalists, and in order to do their globalist agenda, they have to get rid of the Constitution and all these things that bind them. You know, that's what they don't want.
Well, look at the way things are. It's very destructive, especially to our children. And I really do believe we have to, you know, as far as schools are concerned, children should not be allowed to bring cell phones or anything to school. We have to wean our children off and prevent the children being born from getting involved and connected in an early state to Facebook and or any of those social media places and get involved in tweeting and all this stuff until mm-hmm. they're old enough to be able to realize that what kind of control is taken over. Our children are being totally destroyed. I can't believe how these children are acting and talking and doing on these games, and they're interacting from, you know, computer to computer. They're all at home, but they're talking to a lot of people. And all the garbage that's going on and the opportunity for destruction that people come in and destroy the minds of our children, we have to figure out a way to deal with this problem. But I'm going to go watch that video. They were talking about it, and it seems that this particular documentary video sums up the problem pretty good. So if anybody's interested, it's Social Dilemma. It's a documentary released on Netflix. So I'm going to be checking that out tomorrow. But go ahead, final word. I got to move on.
I think I said the final word. We just need to keep saturating everywhere with these, you know, principles that mm-hmm. so they can't. It keeps them from just being able to operate, you know, unfettered.
Mm-hmm.
If we keep. You know, pushing those principles.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really
well. But, no doubt about
you know,
it.
I'm kind of watching. I'm watching the states with this nullification thing, the different ones, and then I'm wondering: is the federal government going to come and with a trump card? You know what I mean? How they do? And so I'm just sort of watching for that. You know, if that's going to happen.
Well, look, we need, as Jefferson said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participates. So we have to get the majority that's going to participate. And I think that number is somewhere around 90,000 people. When you consider, you know, we're over 300 million people, 90,000 people is just a percentage, a small percentage of the population. And I think it can be achieved throughout the nation to get 90,000 people or even 45,000 people to actually take back control of our nation. And when those people do that and take back control of the nation, then somehow one of the big problems is educating the people, the general public, within our election districts, within our own communities, because that 90,000 people, which should be and would be active within their counties, and they should be building up membership constantly, educating people. People become aware of what's going on and what opportunity they have to take control of their lives and their futures by getting involved in what we're doing here. And
I think this is all on the right track. You know, all you need is that wave, which leads to the consensus of the people. Right. And the young people, I believe the young people are really, hungry for this, you know, because they weren't taught these things in school like we were.
Well, remember, we're talking about a small percentage of the young people because most of them being destroyed in schools. But, yes, there are kids, a lot of homeschoolers particularly, but other people who've gone to other schools.
They go to the courtrooms, and they know they're treated with disregard and that they don't get justice there. They know something's wrong, mm-hmm. you know. So I believe that they are hungry for knowledge like this, you know.
Absolutely, yes, definitely. You know, I have a plan myself, and I'm, you know, share this with everyone else and others that should be doing this. Again, this has to be a local thing. We have to visit our colleges. We have to talk to the different political groups within our colleges and talk to them about, you know, our founding fathers, our heritage, how things were really set up, the problems with the parties and what.
Yeah, there's that woman. That woman, Ann Wheeler. She leads some kind of youth group or something, you know, and she's on the right track. So that's kind of what it needs to be.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems we as a people are going to have to address and try to figure out, and I don't think there is a simple solution, but again, it really goes to education. You keep educating the people on the grassroots level more and more and more, and then you become more enlightened, because we have to go, and I think we're heading towards that enlightenment. Then maybe we will have the backbone, the maturity, the ability to curb our children, because we have to get our children off of social media. I don't think children under 18 should be allowed to go, maybe 16 or something, but I don't know. Children should not be on it. Their minds are too malleable. It's too, you can't take a young mind and put them out into that place. And you got all kinds of creeps out there. You got all kinds of organizations looking to, you know, commercialize you, to control you, to buy this or to do that. People being abused and used and violated in different ways. And our children shouldn't be under those things. I mean, how are we going to solve that problem? That's, I think, the big problem in the future, once we get to the point of actually being able to take back control of this nation, is how are we going to protect our children? Because, you know, it's so addictive. It's just an addiction. And that in itself is destructive. And that's why a lot of children, you know, suicide, the suicide is on a rise, I hear. And there's a lot of depression out there. And all of this is really being amplified through the social media stuff. This is a major problem. I did see the trailer about Social Dilemma, and that's kind of the idea of what they're talking about, the problems, and mostly with our children, it seems. But even adults, you know, many adults aren't anchored enough to, you know, I don't get into texting. I don't have time for it, and it's just, in my opinion, a waste of time. I mean, yeah, it's good for a little text here or there. Hey, I'm on my way. I'll be there shortly. You know, something, whatever, you know, something simple. But to be on that all day long, talking, communicating, hearing the beep and going back, and it's insane. It's been a while, because they closed it down. But when I went, not they closed it down, but you can't get in, they're not allowing people to sit around in there. But I go to Dunkin' Donuts before this, the China thing, you know. Go to Dunkin' Donuts, and it used to be people getting together, sitting down, having coffee, talking, but not no more. You'll see six people at a table, and none of them are even looking at each other. They're all on their phones. What the hell did even bother going there?
Yeah. I think the fallout from social media is basically being censored, you know, but it's growing. It's like a tip of the iceberg type thing, you know. I mean, it's not being addressed.
Right. All right, well, look, it's time to close down here. We do have a few more people in the queue, but it's after midnight, and I need to get to sleep. So, Lord,
okay.
We'll be back next Monday. And those in the queue, maybe in the beginning of the program, you can hit the button, get into the queue early, and make sure you're on.
Oh, I wasn't even going to call in. I just heard you say there's nobody in the queue. So
yeah, well, we got four more people still in there now. People came in after that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Good. Otherwise, I'd have to go figure out what I'm going to talk about. I do have a lot of things I could talk about, but in any event. So anyway, thanks everyone for coming. I'm sorry for those in the queue. Again, get into the queue early next week, and we'll get you. And Lord willing, like I said, we'll see you next Monday. Godspeed, everyone. Good night.